go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are at the end of the first week of July. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us. And that's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, madcap, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place in the Horn chat room during the hours when this program is live, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Time, Monday through Friday. You'll be immediately greeted by early arrivers for this Friday on the front porch, Anatole, Dowhead, Squeaky, and, of course, capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, while undoubtedly a third stage guild navigator, has apparently chosen not to fold any space today, neither to the Redwood Tree nor to the Man Cave, because I guess it's 98 degrees there. And you want to be as close to the AC as you possibly can be. I know a little bit of that about that because it's no 98 here, but it's humid as heck. And here in the fabulous Horn Studios, it's all of 85 degrees. And that's a little toasty for here in the studio. But we'll get through 3 hours of conversation, and I bet you we'll enjoy it this evening. Every program at the Horn begins with gratitude, begins with thanks. And this day after Independence Day is no different. Oh, no. Well, we have thanks to send out for our fifth day of the month subscribers this evening. And I'll do that as soon as I get the PayPal open. There we go. Thanks very kindly to our subscribers for today. That would be Roberto and Kevin, James and Kenda. Thanks as well to Barbara, and thanks to Catherine. And all taken all together, that means our fundraising goal this evening is only $405. That is tremendous, but we do need to keep up with that because, busy week next week. Netroots Nation, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, driving on Sunday, driving on Wednesday. Regular programs Monday and Tuesday. But we do need to finish the first week of July's fundraising, so there's $405 to be raised. Hopefully, it would be grand if we could do that, say, in the next hour. And then that way I don't interrupt the Friday on the Front Porch conversation with any funding talk. But thank you very kindly to Barbara and to Catherine for jumping in there early on. And thanks to our subscribers, as mentioned. Let's see, I need to find, because this might be helpful for people other than, where'd it go? Doggone it, I saw I'll just keep looking. I saw a note come in, what it boils down to, I saw a note come in from Barbara saying that she would be attending Netroots Nation. And wanting to know my logistics. I'll be there every day, and I'll be on Radio Row. where that usually they stick that in the exhibit hall or whatever, you know, where the tabling goes on. But I'm pretty hard to miss. And just come by and introduce yourself if you're going to Netroots Nation. Say howdy, and we'll go from there. Okay. So that's the plan. Again, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. On the road Wednesday. On the road home on Sunday. And yeah, come on if you're there. Come on by. Okay. Like I said, Friday on the front porch will begin in about 50 minutes or so. If you'd like to participate in the evening's discussion, and I encourage you so to do, just run on over to headon.live, and the link is there for our front porch this evening. That's what you have to do if you want to get into the Skype group. You have to use the link at headon.live, and that saves a little bit of hassle for Sparky and his moderating duties, among other things. So, yeah, just run over to headon.live and click on the Skype link, and that'll kick you right into the Skype group. And I look forward to seeing who all shows up. Okay? I had a lovely note from Mike in Cascadia a little bit before airtime. I love the content of this. You know, we all sat around here talking about the Independence Day debacle in D.C., and yeah, there's still a lot of fun to be had with that. But Mike had a great idea out in Cascadia. Mike writes, yesterday, to celebrate July 4th, I went to church. Church Mountain, that is. Church Mountain is a minor peak on the western fringes of the North Cascades. Church, just over 6,300 feet tall, used to have a fire lookout on its rocky summit. The five-mile hike to the top entails close to 4,000 feet of climbing on beautiful trail. On a clear day, the views from the summit stretch from the British Columbia coastal mountains in the north to distant, ephemeral Mount Rainier in the south. The foreground view is a direct view into the maw of the jumbled chaos of the North Cascades. Dark spires, glistening glaciers, and steep green forested mountainsides. The names of these peaks enhance the mystique, including sinister, despair, forbidden, terror, formidable, inspiration, triumph. So my day was simple. Hike up Church Mountain and avoid the Trump debacle. With my nearly grown kids out of the house this weekend and with a heavy, wet marine layer discouraging hiking in western Washington, my only hiking partner was my son's dog. That sounds like good company, Mike. Hiking up a mountain is everything antithetical to Trump. It involves walking. It takes... I bet you can't take a golf cart up Church Mountain. It involves walking. It takes perseverance. It involves sweat, thirst, hunger, cold, dedication. It conjures wonder and awe. It inspires exploration with what's around the next corner. It generates love of our federal public lands. It causes community, since it is mine, yours, and ours. It tests your mettle. On the trail, I chatted with four middle-aged women carrying large packs to the summit. They were training to hike the 93-mile Wonderland Trail encircling Mount Rainier in a few weeks. I could see the excitement and trepidation in their eyes. Talk about testing your mettle. Yesterday, church was wrapped in thick clouds, so I didn't get the big view. Instead, I was rewarded with the micro view. At my feet were explosions of wildflowers, rivaling any fireworks display. Indian paintbrush, valerian, bistort, phlox, alpine lupine, hellebore. The wildflower garden surpassed anything created by human gardeners. If the day had been sunny and warm, It was easy to imagine Julie Andrews traversing the hillside singing The Sound of Music. The hills are alive, I'll add. Mike continues, our federal public lands do more than provide us a place to hike or test our mettle or hunt or fish. These places provide clean, fresh water. These places bolster our clean air. These places provide sanctuary for wildlife, all antithetical to Trump. But it is not just Trump. The GOP national platform calls for the disposal of our federal public lands. Disposal means privatization. We cannot let this happen. Wallace Stegner, the great Western writer, closed his famous wilderness letter with these words. We simply need that wild country available to us, even if we never do more than drive to its edge and look in, for it can be a means of reassuring ourselves of our sanity as creatures, a part of the geography of hope. Happy July 4th weekend, Bob. Signed, Mike. And a happy Independence Day weekend to you as well. I hope you can get out even more and I know that feeling. Even when it's kind of gray and gloomy, a walk in the hills can be a beautiful, beautiful experience. I need to find more time for them. And Mike sent along some photographs, and you'll forgive me, but they're beautiful. They're just gorgeous. But in my head, because, you know, there's a constant audio soundtrack loop playing back there, I heard those opening notes with all that reverb. It sounded like the opening strains of the theme to Twin Peaks. So thanks for the photos, Mike, and thanks for the thought. Other thoughts coming in. I had one a note from Ron in Raleigh. Subject line, concerning the census. I was a census taker for the 2010 census, and if my experience is any indication, there is an undercount without any extra effort by the Trump regime. People wouldn't answer the door, or just refused to answer the questions. Old Balls and Strikes said that the reason given by Trump was insufficiently bullshit, so he said to go back and come up with a better bullshit reason. Now, I'm not a lawyer, nor do I play one on TV, but I have to believe that if the first reason is so transparently bullshit, the next reason has to be even more transparently bullshit. John Roberts cares a little about his legacy, but the rest of the pillocks don't give a damn after all. It's the Roberts Court. Oh, make no mistake, if there's a chance to do some racist, dirty work, John Roberts is always up for that. Because, see, he doesn't believe that the government has any place in trying to alleviate the sin of racism. Yeah. I'm sure it's an undercount. What, was it 2010 when that poor guy in Kentucky got murdered? For simply trying to ask census questions? I mean, Appalachia. But I do suggest that, like I mentioned last night on the program, if anyone, if they manage to sleaze a citizenship question, and just take a big Sharpie and write in big bold letters, STFUD, across the question. Shut the fuck up, Donnie. No, in further answer to the question Barbara asked, I'm not on a panel. I'll just be doing the program. What I'll probably wind up doing is a series of interviews and stitch them all together and then run them at airtime. Because what I've found over the course of doing these things is that usually the exhibit hall has cleared out by that time. Of course, there may be some keynotes, and I may be able to just pick up the gizmo and go and plug into the audio feed and send that over the horn stream as well. Albert with a question, Albert in Rhode Island. I finally got my internet service restored. I moved to a new home recently. It's really great to listen to you again. But I really enjoy listening to the Astros games again, too. Who do you think wrote Dope 45's speech yesterday? I'm thinking Barron and Stephen Miller. Barron, I think, did the proofreading. That's the only explanation I can come up with for not knowing the difference between the Revolution and the War of 1812, or thinking that there were, you know, airports during the Revolution. Mm-hmm. But there has been a lot of fun had over the last 21 hours or so with all of this madness. You know, the airport battles were obviously in retaliation for the Bowling Green massacre. God, that was a long time ago, wasn't it? But to the extent that, it became a Twitter thing, a hashtag, I guess. Let me see if I can find this real quick. The hashtag is Revolutionary War Airport Stories. And you can't just let things like this slide by without... No, you can't. So, consequently, this... I laugh now every time I hear that. Dearest Martha, our retreat from Manhattan after the battle against General Howe was ensured by a providential fog with which he saw fit to deliver. The Almighty has also seen fit that said fog has grounded Howe's TAC air units at LaGuardia. My dearest, this will likely be my last text for a while. My iPhone has only 10% battery, and Benedict Arnold has infected all the airport charging stations with Russian spyware. Farewell, my love. I'll text you when I find a new power source. Dearest, the battle for Gate C4 was hard fought, but we prevailed. Alas, we ran out of ammunition and had to lob our stores of Cinnabons at them. The sacrifices of war try our souls. Dearest Eliza, the men are near mutiny. The 4-ounce liquid limit means their rum ration has been severely curtailed. We may not survive this campaign. Yours always, A. Hamilton.
My dear Frederick, they continue to hold us prisoner. All we have been given to eat are small portions of miniature pretzels and no ale or mead. They torture us with stories of some mythical being called a beverage cart, yet it does not appear.
My dearest Emma, conditions are horrid. The Yanks have closed down the Cinnabon in the terminal. Savages! I cannot even find a decent cup of tea. Send crumpets. Willard.
Dearest Jebediah, our flight has been delayed again. Waiting on the tarmac, our supplies of honey roasted peanuts and Fresca are almost depleted. We're talking about rebellion against first class. Please tell the children I love them.
If the airfield at Germantown be still in our hands, and if Monsieur Hare be to the task, implore him to the necessity that I have 30 hogsheads of his porter upon my return to Mount Vernon by earliest dirigible. Yours, George Washington. Oh, the suffering. The suffering. My dearest Kate, I must tell you of our latest triumph in our war for independence. Though outnumbered by the Redcoats, General Washington was adamant that at dawn we charged the concourse by Gate 12, the one nearest Spirit Airlines. Sadly, we had to pull back all the way to the southwest gates. There I saw my best friend James die of a peanut allergy. Oh, the humanity. But by noon we were triumphant. I feel this war will control JFK and will be coming to a close soon, as we now control JFK and LaGuardia. Ever your love, Thomas. It's on this day that we celebrate a brave patriot who passed between the lines and made sure the supplies were stocked with overpriced snacks and warm sodas. His name? Hudson News. It was the Battle of LaGuardia. My ancestor, who was a captain in Van Alstyne's regiment of the Albany County Militia, was wounded once at baggage claim, and then again on the tarmac as he tried to wrest the props from the wheels so that Lafayette could take to the skies to rescue the besieged Ethan Allen boys at Ticonderoga, but the Black Hawks from Griffiths Air Force Base were already there. And then the ragtag militia from Boston enjoyed a well-deserved Sam Adams lager at Terminal 1 before marching on to baggage claim, where they received celebratory cheers from passengers who had just arrived from Atlanta. Logan Airport was much smaller then. It was on a hill and too close to the bay. Planes were always crashing into ships' masts. It was dangerous. It was a major reason the British lost the war. LaGuardia and JFK were safer, but too far away. It was a brutal war. In the winter, the colonists preferred to fight in Florida, but the British thought it was a trick and wouldn't leave Foxborough. The Patriots used underinflated cannonballs there and eventually drove them out. General Python's memoirs expressed bitterness at the shortage of real horses and the unfair underinflated cannonballs. Yes, yes. The proud history of the war for the airports back in 1776. Mr. Crispus of Tux, please step this way for further screening. What? Again? I gotta get my black ass shot before I'm seen as equal around here?
Dearest Harold, please expect a delay of about a fortnight. I've been detained by security forces for carrying 3 extra ounces of moisturizer. Again. Dearest Maisie, we're holding the line at Auntie Annie's Pretzels near B7. Reinforcements just arrived from Newark, but they fled down the escalators. I fear we're on our own. Beloved, 'tis been a harrowing journey. Due to meager funds, we had to use the flying carriage named Frontier. Our carriage was tardy due to difficulties with maintenance. Upon arrival at Yorktown, the House of Cinnabon was shuttered. Dear James, we ran out of covfefe near a fortnight ago. We raided the plane's hospitality carts to no avail. The Redcoats had diamond status and entered the jetway before us. I fear the Duncan at Gate 35B has been overrun. We're at a disadvantage.
Abigail, it is hot as hell in Philadelphia. My desire for a quick trip to Boston is thwarted by a connecting flight through Atlanta. It's as if the world has turned upside down. Yours, John.
And thus the history. The proud history. The forgotten history. Of the Continental Army's triumphs. At the Revolutionary War airport battles. Thank you, says Steve in New York, so much for telling us about the forgotten airport battles in our War of Independence. You know, any opportunity you get to use the word dirigible, I'm behind it. Lee in New York says, remember the watchful eyes on the old North Church, one if by land, two if by sea, three if by air.
Yes.
Oh, and I woke to a little bit of, well, I hate to call it good news, but it kind of is. What's that, Todd in South Carolina, Stan? Ken Burns is currently sending you a nasty email.
Yeah.
You have to use that music when you do these things. You realize that, right? The universe would probably collapse in on itself if you did. Right. Yeah, sure. Dearest Martha, if only I'd had Ferg back here, he could have read some of those in his stunningly good Morgan Freeman voice and given it some real panache. Let me. Wait a minute, that's a cowbell. In the chat room, House of Roberts says, one nation, indirigible, with liberty and justice for... Absolutely. Oh, God, you guys are good. You're I think you're banging on all eight this evening. I can't make myself feel completely like a terrible person. You'll understand what I'm getting at in a minute. What's that, Alma? Are you live? I'm unable to get the program today. We're going on both streams, are we not? I'm sorry, I had to respond to Alma's email because she's not getting the audio. Anyway, here's my consternation. I got up this morning to find out, background. Several years ago, I made a couple of trips up into northern Wisconsin. My buddy Bruce had first alerted me to what was going on there, and then I got to see for myself. A nasty, nasty corporation called GTAC, for Gogebic Taconite, had declared their desire to bring jobs to the north woods of Wisconsin, up around Ashland. Over toward, Hurley? I can't, anyway. No, not Hurley. There's nothing. Anyhow, they're the old mining and timber area up there, and there's a bunch of iron ore under the Pinoki Hills, which are just exquisitely beautiful. And it is the ancestral and ancient homelands of the Bad River Band of the Ojibwe Indians. And I went up there to try to lend my voice common camaraderie and common cause of Appalachian activists to their effort, because it was an Appalachian person who was hell-bent on destroying that area. In the name of extracting iron ore, which of course then would release toxic chemicals into the Bad River and the entire watershed there, which is lovely and clean and pristine. This renegade hillbilly coal baron wanted to dig a hole 1,500 feet deep, 22 miles long, and a half mile wide through the Pinoki Hills. That coal baron's name was Chris Klein. And yes, was. Because I awoke this morning to find out that Chris Klein, overnight, got himself and six other people all dead. Chris Klein is a billionaire. He owned, among other things, a yacht that he kept in Florida that he christened Mind Games. It had its own private submarine. Five stateroom suites on this thing. Oh, it was just obscene. Had a 33,000 square foot mansion in Florida and another one up here in West Virginia. At one point in time, he was dating Tiger Woods' ex. He was known for being an asshole, but also a bit of the playboy. And ostentation was his watchword. Heard a story today about him taking delivery on a brand new Lamborghini once, and they brought it to his place, and they rolled it off the carrier vehicle. And he got in, started it up, and threw a fit because the odometer had all of four, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4 miles on it, so he felt like he'd bought a used car. He blew up mountains all over Appalachia, all over West Virginia. Then he went out and tried to and participated in ruining a lot of lovely land in southern Illinois, the ancestral stomping grounds of my buddy Jeff Biggers. I imagine Jeff is not in church lighting any candles for Chris Klein, or won't be anytime soon, nor will I. Being a billionaire, for some reason or another, at 2:30 this morning, local time, they boarded a helicopter in the Bahamas for a flight to Fort Lauderdale. Four men, three women, one of whom was Chris Klein's daughter. They lost contact with the helicopter, and the helicopter was shortly found upside down, having crashed. No one survived. Yeah, I'm still trying to squeeze out a tear or two. He has been eulogized today all over West Virginia as a billionaire philanthropist, which is kind of a bullshit thing to say, because the only reason he was giving any money away was in support of his own agenda or to try to keep the licking flames of hell from touching his little heels while he was still here on Earth. But they crashed into the water upside down, and a man who tried to poison and destroy clean water in northern Wisconsin, who was stopped, but who succeeded in destroying clean water in Illinois and Appalachia, who caused toxic clouds of ultrafine particulate dust to rain over communities that wound up helping to kill some of the more than 1,000 West Virginians who die every year in West Virginia's mountaintop removal communities from mountaintop removal. The man who poisoned that water and tried to poison more was killed by water. The goddess of irony is not one to be messed with. Nope, not indeed. Governor Jim Justice said, West Virginia's lost a great man. Funny, I don't recall Jim Justice taking specific time out to talk about all the other great men who have died in service of that toxic industry over the last century plus. I guess somebody will miss him. It won't be me. And this is one of those moments where you don't go all nil nisi bonum on no. Because the man is being lionized as having been some sort of decent human being, when in fact he spread as much poison as any other coal baron around here. By Chris Klein. I wonder if they've got the pineapples out yet. Well, thank you. Reverbo says that was inspired, talking about the Revolutionary War airport stories. Inspired, says Reverbo, one of the funniest pieces you've ever done. Thank you. And the funny thing is that the George Washington tweet about sending 30 hogsheads of porter to Mount Vernon has a grounding in truth. Agnes shared the story with me the other day, and I found it quite fascinating. You know, if you're any kind of a beer fan, you know that in the present era and you know, in the microbrewing craze, everybody's got an India Pale Ale, an IPA. It's IPA here. It's IPA there. It's a double Russian oatmeal IPA lambic stout. When in point of fact, IPA just means it's got a ton of hops in it, and it's so bitter it'll turn your mouth inside out. It was developed that way as a preserving agent so that the beer could be shipped from England to India. But prior to that, one of the favorite beers in England was simply called porter. It's a darker beer. It's malty, somewhat sweet. Depending on what yeast you use, you can get some really interesting fruit profiles from the phenolics that the yeasts produce. And it became popular in England because it's what the people who carried stuff drank, the porters, hence the name. Well, when the revolution got cooking, beer imports from England began to be a problem. The Patriots didn't want to be contributing to the English economy by drinking English beer. So lo and behold, around in the early 1770s, a man named Mr. Hare, H-A-R-E, began brewing a porter in Philadelphia. And the gang attending the Continental Congress couldn't get through a day without two or three pints. You have to remember that this country was founded by a bunch of loaded white men. And I mean, you know, turnt. Gallon and a half of wine a day, three or four pints of beer, maybe a couple of laudanum chasers. It was not the staid time that it is portrayed to be. And so it was that George Washington, who had a monarchist streak, he liked to be regal, would make sure that no matter what else the situation demanded, that he had Mr. Hare's porter on hand at his headquarters camp, wherever it was he was retreating from. You do know that George Washington spent most of the Revolution retreating, right? Mr. Hare went on, his beer became so popular that he was able to enter Pennsylvania politics. He wound up being the president of the Pennsylvania Senate. And then he just quit brewing. George Washington tried and tried. Well, I mean, he didn't do any actual work. Somebody did it for him. Somebody whose labor was being stolen from them at the time. But he very badly wanted to recreate that porter at Mount Vernon. You may recall he also he didn't do it. He didn't lift a finger. He had someone else to do it from him whose labor he was stealing. But experiments in the cultivation of cannabis. And you know, if you're just growing it for hemp, for rope, you don't need to separate the males from the females. But, well, George had quite a bit of pain, and one suspects that he knew the pain-relieving qualities of certain cannabis species. So, yeah, Mr. Hare's Porter was really popular long about July the 4th, 1776. And it was the first porter ever made in the United States. It's hard. It used to be you could find a porter here or there. But most of the microbrews out there are part of the IPA craze. Having done some brewing myself in the past, and having had a couple of batches come out not the way I planned and not with the flavor profile I wanted, I covered up those mistakes by throwing in a scoop of hops and letting it ferment for another month or so, and it turned out so damn bitter that yes, it would just about make the back of your neck come through the front of your hang out under your nostrils, because that's what hops does. And I'll probably get hate mail for that. I can't believe you don't like IPA, man. It's just not drinkable for me. I shouldn't have to. No. Porter, on the other hand, is lovely. But it's hard to find. But just a little moment from our history. Uh-oh. Lady B has done gone gimmick infringement. You'll be getting a letter from Ron and Raleigh's lawyers, Lady B. Bob, you're killing me. Dead. I'm dead, Bob. No liquor, because our liquor's been rationed to 4 ounces. Dude, slow clap. Fucking bravo. You deserve all the praises today. Little tiny bottles. Yeah. So, just a couple of things. It was funny how everybody, and understandable, too, how everybody gravitated toward the whole airports in 1776 portion of the speech. But the part where he elided the revolution with the War of 1812 was, I thought, all the more stunning. Because of who I am, I could imagine how it happened. Wait a minute. We got all this Revolutionary War stuff in there. Where's the part about the national anthem? You know, that goddamn Colin Kaepernick, that son of a bitch, he won't kneel. We got to get the national anthem in there. The rocket's red glare. Okay, Daddy. And, you know, Barron doesn't know anything about I mean, what, he's 14? At least they haven't shipped him off to juvenile detention school yet. You know, some military school. Like they did with Donnie. But between him and Stephen Miller, I mean, that's the airports, because they try to come up with excuses. Well, it said ports, but he couldn't read. And today he gave his own excuse. The teleprompter went kaput. It was kaput, totally kaput. But I could still read it, but it was kaput. And there was rain all over, so it wasn't very clear. His apologist said it was clear that he just made a mistake and put air in front of ports, because there were the English did have control of the ports. Laura Ingraham got downright testy and said, okay, you got him. He said airports. Do you feel better now? God, they're so invested, and they have to keep doubling down on the investment. It becomes pathetic in its own way. But we got through it. He was desperate, so consequently he tweeted and then retweeted himself, showing pictures of his crowd. But don't look for this to be a fun weekend in D.C. Oh, no. The Proud Boys are at it again. Now, remember, the Proud Boys' only purpose is to incite riots. But because of our fetishized approach to the First Amendment, they have to be allowed to go and you know, incite those riots. Tomorrow, July the 6th, just a few blocks from the White House, the Proud Boys and a number of white-wing attention seekers plan to rally for free speech. Yeah. Counter-protesters are holding their own demonstrations. And based upon the way that the Proud Boys work, they will probably try to start a brawl. Yeah. Laura Loomer will be there. That's the nut job who handcuffed herself to Twitter's headquarters. Roger Stone will be there, probably violating his bail. Milo Yiannopoulos will be there. The founder of the Proud Boys, Gavin McInnes, will be there, even though he left the Proud Boys. And so there's every reason to expect that there will be trouble in D.C. tomorrow. Because just last week, they instigated trouble in Portland, along with some other, you know, like the Three Percenters and the Oath Keepers, the usual slimy lineup of right-wing instigators. And, of course, they played their victim card real big time because a little wannabe right-wing troll fake journalist named Andy No got a milkshake thrown at him. And the cops promulgated a bullshit story about these vegan milkshakes may possibly have quick-setting concrete in them. Although, and it went all over the internet, and there has never been a shred of proof that there was any such thing. Someone was passing out vegan coconut milkshakes, that's true. And I even read a couple of places that said they were awfully doggone tasty. But it allowed the Proud Boys to pretend they're victims. And now the Proud Boys are saying, well, you know, we might get milkshaked, so we better take our guns. It's set for Freedom Plaza. I know where that is. The U.S. Park Police patrols that particular area. Apparently they have been forewarned of the predilection of the Proud Boys for violence. And D.C. law, according to a statement issued by D.C. Metro Police, D.C. law expressly prohibits anyone from carrying a firearm within 1,000 feet of any First Amendment activity. Let's see how that holds. Cassandra Komar is a counter-protest organizer. Interviewed by Think Progress, she said, "The Proud Boys have been going from city to city, and there's usually an incident or altercation, and people get hurt. This happens on a constant basis. When we discovered they were filling the speaker list for the rally, we decided we needed a robust response to keep our community safe." Because, like all good fascists, they prefer to attack people en masse, and they prefer to attack people who are otherwise defenseless.
Mm-hmm.
So that gets us to a starting place. And note coming from Stephen, New York. Some really good porters I've recently had. Bell's Porter, Central Waters Rum Barrel Aged Coconut Porter. Damn, that sounds interesting. Avery Brewing Company Barrel Aged Coconut Porter. Steve says those are all real good. I like a porter. I mean, you can't drink much because it's a little bit of a heavier beer, and I'm sure it just packs a boatload of calories. But that's where the flavor comes in. I had one from a brewery, I guess maybe in Asheville, North Carolina once. It was a coffee porter, but it didn't taste like coffee. It tasted like chocolate, and it was heavenly. Steve also adds, remind me, who are the snowflakes again? Well, they're toxic snowflakes, but yeah, I get your point. Albert wants to know, Bob, what is a 3% person? The 3%ers, and you'll know them because they use III, the Roman numeral 3, as their logo. And quite often they get it inked into their hides. The 3%ers get their name from their allegation that only 3% of the people in the colonies participated in the revolution. And so they too are revolutionaries, and they're going to be the 3% that overturns constitutional governance in the United States while at the same time preaching a constitutional message. They are, in fact, fascists, and they're violent, as fascists are wont to be. And you also often see them in the company of Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. I saw a video of one Proud Boy going by a line of police and getting a fist bump from a police officer. It wasn't like the Proud Boy was trying to fist bump anybody. The officer was holding his fist up to bump with. In other words, the cop was inviting the fist bump. And one of the things that we do not know in this country, which we may only ever know if we learn it the hard way, is the extent to which law enforcement in this country has been infiltrated by these neo-fascist movements. Some observations on Nitwit Nero, courtesy of Monique. You think he ties his own ties? They got to be coming pre-tied, right? I bet he wears slip-on loafers, too. Hey, easy, I like slip-ons. It's because of the shape of my foot. Monique says, that's why his favorite foods are ones that don't require a knife and fork. Is there any actual footage of him cutting his steak? I'll say it, karma. Laura Loomer blocked herself to Twitter back when they were still in New York. Monique tells me Twitter hightailed it out of town. They're in New Jersey now. Jesus. So that gets us started. And hey, tremendous thanks to Kat Thank you, Kat, for jumping in on the fundraising goal. That takes us down to 305. $305 to raise this evening, and then Monday and Tuesday is another four. So 705 to up to the getaway day, but just 305 to finish the first week of July now. Thank you. Tremendous thanks, Kat. Thank you so very much indeed. Let's run over to Skype and see what's going on with Sparky there in the cool, cool air conditioning. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Cool.
The reason I'm inside, not out underneath the redwood tree, is my neighbor's son's out, has one of those, his business is blow up bouncy houses and slides and that kind of thing. And he brings them over here all the time, usually on Sundays. But I guess he had them rented out yesterday or something. And so he's cleaning them today out there. And then he gets all his kids to clean them with him. So there's a lot of yelling and screaming going on. Then that blower is right about 20 feet away from where I've been sitting.
Yeah, I was going to say that the whatever it is that keeps it inflated is kind of noisy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, but it's also 98 degrees outside, you said.
Yeah, but it's usually about 10 degrees cooler underneath the redwood tree.
Yeah, so that would take you down to 88.
Yeah, and then I got that little fan that was blowing on me.
Do I hear Grady in the background?
Yes, he's in here with me. He's right up against me. Today was my shopping day, so...
Oh, did you make the long 40-mile drive?
No, not that kind of shopping. Your grocery store shopping.
Oh.
So I got some potato salad while I was at the deli. It's pretty good. And then I stopped at the way home at the butcher shop, which is about a mile away from here. Because every Friday they cook up tri-tips on their trayers or whatever they are, their wood chip or pellet barbecues.
Yeah.
They got a couple of them running all the time on Friday.
Well, that sounds tasty. Do they just do it straight up, or is there any kind of marinade to it or flavoring or...
No,
they hit it with that Pappy stuff you were talking about?
No, they have their own marinade. Because they sell tri-tips two ways. Marinated, whole tri-tips, raw, marinated or unmarinated. So they probably use their own marinade. I don't know what it is, but it's pretty good. What I did is I bought a half pound of the cooked stuff. They use it for tri-tip sandwiches on Friday. They got a deli inside the butcher shop.
Now, is that the same butcher shop that used to have the ghost pepper cheese?
Exactly the same.
Okay. Well, that sounds tasty. I've been thinking I'm going to try to do a sirloin tip roast in the smoker soon. Just let the smoke pour to it in the low heat until it gets to about 118, 120 degrees inside. You know, there in the middle of it, and yeah, it makes a great sandwich. A little horseradish.
Well, I just had it plain with a little bit of soy sauce on it and some potato salad. I just had a taste of it. I didn't get too carried away. I might have some more later.
You need to look around out there sometime, Sparky, and see if you can find and it's over there in the barbecue sauces and the soy and all that stuff. It's called Dale's, D-A-L-E apostrophe S. And it's pretty much, it's a marinade of sort, but you can also sprinkle it. It's got a whopping big flavor. It's soy sauce based.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to tell you, I looked it up while you were talking about it. Sierra Nevada makes a porter.
Do they?
Yeah.
I've never seen it around here. We've had their pills a few times and their IPAs, but at some point in time, the IPA phase has got to die out, and we'll go back to drinking, normal beer again. But it's just completely, it's gotten completely out of hand.
Well, you get whatever the North Carolina bottling plant puts out, probably.
Yeah, that. Yeah.
You go in our grocery store, and then you have about three, 4 foot of shelf space just for Sierra Nevada, different beers. I've seen the porter.
Yeah, and they're in what, Chico?
Yeah, 40 miles south of me. I go 40 miles north for the pot, 40 miles south of me is where they make the beer.
You're 40 miles from everywhere, aren't you, Sparky?
Well, not from my town. I'm only 3 miles from downtown, if that.
Well, let's see. I see Roger popped into the room this evening. Hey, Roger, how you doing? You know,
he's here.
Yeah,
just muted.
There we go. There we go.
There's Roger.
Finally had to find the button. Yeah, I sent your package off today. According to the post office, it should be there Monday.
Okay, wonderful.
Just to let you know.
Well, you started a mass drooling frenzy the other night. I want you to know that you just about drove poor Steve in New York half out of his mind.
Well, I caught that on the night listening that I do, because I have a hard time hanging around for the whole show during the day with the grandkids and all that kind of stuff, and I got to run off again tonight a little early because I'm a member of the Little British Car Club here in Eugene, and one of the members, who I wish I had his money, is opening up his garage. He's got 100 roadworthy cars in his garage.
That's not a garage, that's a hangar.
Yeah, and his latest purchase, he was over in England, and whatever car it was that James Bond drove, a DB4, 5.
Aston Martin, yeah, Aston Martin DB, yeah.
Yeah, well, he found one over in England and decided he didn't want to wait for the ocean going numbers, so he had it loaded into an airplane and flown from London to Portland, and he went up and picked it up. So,
oh man, he's got spaceship money.
Yeah. So it should be in his warehouse for today's open garage tour. So wife and I are headed down there to look at that.
Oh, that'll be a drool fest too. So are you into little English cars?
Yeah, I have a 1966 Triumph Spitfire.
Oh, fun.
It was the poor man's sports car when it was originally issued in 63. And anyhow, the TR4s, TR3s, TR250s, TR6s, TR7s, those were all much more expensive. The Spitfire was a little four banger that came out with an 1147, which they increased to 1297 in 1967. So it tootles down the road at 45, 55 mile an hour very comfortably. And it's fun to drive in the summer.
Now, how does that compare size-wise to, like, an MG Midget?
It's about the same size. It's a little smaller than the MGA, MGB. It's a small two-seat sports car.
And I bet every minute of it is fun to drive.
Oh, yeah, particularly on back roads. Anyhow, I did a little research on the corn.
Did you now?
And I only have one problem, and nobody seems to have addressed it. And that is, when you make sauerkraut, there's bacteria on the leaves and that kind of stuff that get the fermentation process going, the yeasts and that kind of stuff. In all the recipes I found for the corn, they ask you to shuck it, and then blanch it for about 5 minutes, and then put it in a brine and let it go. And my only question is, if this works, sort of how come because it seems to me that the blanching would kill off any of the natural bacteria that's on the corn to start the fermentation process.
Well, if I may dare to be so bold, it's because those because the things that start the fermentation are actually airborne. That's how they get on the cabbage leaves and stuff. And so if you if you will set your crock or your churn or whatever just in a darkish, warmish, dusty place, it'll go.
Yeah, well, that seems reasonable. I thought maybe just grab a leaf off a broccoli plant out in the garden and put it in the pot to get it started, or a piece of a broccoli leaf, would ensure that I get the right fermentation stuff. But then again, if you throw in a pepper or two, you probably got it on the leaf of the pepper.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And maybe in the garlic cloves as well.
Yeah, that's true. Anyhow, I'm trying to figure out how many ears of corn I want to put down, whether I want to put them in whole or break them into like 2-inch chunks or.
Yeah, I'd say more like 3 or 4 inch. But you know, if you've got an ordinary sized ear of corn, just break it in two.
Okay.
And
in my research, it's anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks.
Yep.
Depending on the temperature. And being as it's warm up here, it'll probably be the 2 to 3 weeks before there's any report.
Do you have a cellar?
No.
Okay.
I'm in Oregon. Come on. Who has a cellar? The water table's at 2 feet.
Well, okay. I stand corrected. It probably will be a faster fermentation. And I could be wrong, but if you're a lover of kraut, you're going to go wild over that stuff.
Well, what I'm figuring is I've got a thing called pickle pipes, but it's a ferment keeps the air out after it's gotten started, and so you don't get the mold and fungi on the surface of your fermentation.
Yeah.
Because it's a carbon dioxide environment, and I figured I'd do it in the gallon jar, and just let that go, put it out in the mother-in-law unit that so far this summer hasn't gotten above 74. So anything the outside is higher, and in my garage it gets up a lot higher because my freezers are in there. So I've always found with sauerkraut, the cooler it is, the better it is.
Mm-hmm.
It just takes long.
Yeah, cool. I think cool is better. But I got it that if you're successful, and if my prediction comes true, you're going to find yourself saying, I needed a whole lot more than a gallon jar.
Yeah, well, if I need more than a gallon jar, hopefully it has done it, and I've tasted it before the end of corn season this year.
Yeah, and of course, the pickling brine, the juice, is delicious in itself.
Well, so sauerkraut juice, but...
Oh, yeah.
It's a little too salty for my taste, but, you know, it's good, too. Anyhow, in your box, you've got raspberry syrup,
ooh,
mixed berry syrup, blackberry syrup, tuna fish,
ooh,
in the ahi, and don't believe everything that's written on the top of the label, because you've got a jar that has a lid on it that I reused, and it reads something like peach ginger preserves, but that's not what's in there, and you'll be able to tell the difference that it's not what it says on the top.
Oh, I will be there. The way they operate there, I'll be there on Tuesday.
Okay.
Yeah, with bells
jar,
on.
Yeah, well, that jar apparently has from a rumor I heard that when people ship cowbells, you need to deaden the flapper.
Yes.
And so I just had that little space, and I wanted to fill it up with something.
Okay, well, I will happily maybe I'll unbox it on air. Maybe I'll have a little thing of Haagen-Dazs vanilla handy for a tasting come Titanic Tuesday.
Well, I'll tell you what would even be better if you could find it is Humboldt's Finest. ice cream.
Not around here.
Well, Costco sells it on occasion.
Yeah, we don't have any of those either.
Okay, well, it's made with cream from the cows that are grass-fed only on the Ferndale Bottoms. And it's just no GMO feed or anything like that. It's a really good ice cream.
Oh, it sounds fantastic.
Well, you need to get out here to the West Coast and get some good eats.
I believe you me, I would like to figure out a way.
Well, when's Netroot Nation coming to the West Coast again?
You know, I think the last one they did was like San Jose, and that was 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, well, you could spend a time in San Jose and then come up and...
Well, I mean, they won't go back to San Jose, though. But I'm figuring, let's see, next year, I'm wondering if they will, knowing the way they think, they will probably go to an in-play state for the presidential election. So they're in Philly this year. Oh, God. They might pick somewhere in Ohio or they may just go to Milwaukee. Since the convention's going to be there too.
Well, I was just figuring that if you came into L.A., there's a couple of people in L.A. that could probably find you a mattress. And then from L.A. to Sparky is a good day's drive, and you could spend time with Sparky. And then I'm about 4 or 5 hours north of Sparky, and then there's probably somebody in the Portland area that could find you a mattress, and that's about 2 hours north of me. And
then wend my way all the way up to B.C. and hang out with Brother Deacon Asa a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, so we got you covered for room and board on the West Coast. We just need to get you here.
You know, that may be a laudable goal for next summer, because now that, thanks to the new broadcast rig that the community provided, and one in particular, my entire road rig now is down to one wheeled computer case. So it makes
Excellent.
It a lot easier to do things like flying around with it.
And you just need a Wi-Fi?
Yeah, then you just need internet and electricity.
Well, the invitation's open anytime you want to come through.
Well,
Sorry I didn't get to meet up with Ferg when he came through the West Coast.
Yeah, he still thinks about going back out there from time to time. He enjoyed his time as a ranch hand, but that's some hard work.
With the bunnies?
I don't have any ranch hand work to do, but come October I could give him a different experience.
Such as?
Oh, the boy's a licensed grower here in California.
Ah. You know, I bet he would find that to be quite the experience. Indeed.
Cutting down the plants, hanging them, trimming them, all that kind of stuff.
You know, that would probably just be hog heaven for him.
Yeah, well, I'm getting tired of doing it.
Should I go ahead and mention this to him?
Yeah, go for it. I mean, there's not a lot of money in it. That's why the kid's having me do it, is because he can't afford to pay anybody to do it, because the price went to snot.
Oh, really? Did the market collapse?
Oh, totally. According to the Matrix people here in Oregon, in their database of what was produced last year, there's approximately 2 to 2.5 times the annual consumption volume on the shelf at producers' sites. And we haven't even started the harvest this year.
Yeah, we need more states to go legal.
And allow interstate shipment.
Exactly.
Oregon has already passed the bill saying we can go interstate shipment as soon as it comes off Schedule 1. Because they've realized that the people that are growing are simply shutting down and going out of business and going broke because they can't market it. I mean, stuff that used to go for anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000 a pound is now down in the $500 to $800 range.
Wow. Yeah, it'd be it would be nice if, as a nation, we could stop being so stupid about all of this. You know, what's that? James in Illinois says, and he's got a lot of West Coast experience. West Coast trip, get a boat. I think James is talking about living aboard a boat somewhere, and that would not break my heart at all.
Yeah, well, this is for Sparky. You need to move further north. We're only at about 82 degrees here.
I ain't moving.
Well, I'm just telling you, it's only 82.
Well, I've lived in this heat all my life, so.
Yeah, more power to you. I can't do it. It's hard enough getting used to up here from living over on the coast. Where 72 degrees was a hot day.
I only own a third of this house, so I'd have to. I don't know how they move with that kind of money.
No, because houses up here aren't cheap. But anyhow, happy 4th. That evening of the 4th, there was an awful lot of wind noise that I picked up when I was listening to it.
Yeah, that was Sparky. That was Sparky's USB fan.
Oh.
No, but no. When people complained about it, I think I shut it off.
All right, I was just listening to it last night.
I wasn't sure if you could hear it or not.
Well, I listen virtually all night long to the radio. I sleep and listen and sleep and listen with earbuds. And it was just, it was very noticeable. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I got to run off.
All right. Well, enjoy the cars, and thanks again for the care package, Roger. On the way out the door, an English car joke from Ron and Raleigh. Why do Englishmen drink warm beer? They have Lucas refrigerators.
Yeah, well, in a response to that one, is you know why the Lucas factory never ran a night shift? And that is because everybody was afraid to drive at night.
Well, enjoy, and hopefully we'll talk soon, and I'll do the unboxing next week.
Okay, well, I'll catch you next week when things have calmed down, but I'll be back down in California the middle of next week, so I don't know what all's going on. I'm just so damn busy doing nothing, I haven't got time to get anything done. So,
I know how that goes. Roger, have a good one.
I'm going to be out of here. Bye.
Bye now. And again, a reminder, we're down to $305 to finish the week, 305. And another reminder, Ralph's still has an offer on the table. Ralph's will double the first month's subscription for 5 new $10 a month subscribers. So your first month subscription of 10 becomes 20, courtesy of Ralph's. If we can get 5 new subscribers, this has been on the table all week. So that would be a lovely. Adding subscribers makes life a little bit simpler because it cuts down on the amount of this sort of thing. So thank you, Ralphs. Thank you very, very kindly. Note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Less than a mile from my home is a 100-acre property with a colonial on it that used to be an 18th-century tavern. My niece worked on the property last summer, tending to the then-owner's horses. The owner later sold it to the local winery. I learned from my friend who works at the winery that George Washington stopped at the tavern back in the day. I have to wonder how all that alcohol affected his wooden teeth. It must have been gross. Oh, it's even grosser when you find out that the teeth weren't necessarily all wooden. The base of it was the teeth were either carved ivory or quite possibly the teeth of deceased slaves. Well, there went dinner in the central time zone, possibly the mountain as well. Ew. Ew. So that, yeah. Well, let's move around the room a little bit more, and check in. Billable Rick in? Well, apparently, the, yeah. Hi. Yeah,
you
jump in. Yeah, I got you.
Oh, good. I wasn't sure. Yeah, my with this new Skype, my mic isn't always spot on. So, I'm back at work today. I had the fourth off. Enjoyed the fireworks at the Huntington Beach. That was my first time doing it, and they did put on quite a show. And got stuck in traffic afterwards. We actually had to walk like about a mile from the beach to get to our pickup point. We had a friend drop us off at the pier or near the pier, and then the agreement was we would meet up at a different house where my where Star's son was hanging out and partying. And boy, I tell you, you know, the fireworks continued. People were lighting off Roman candles in the middle of the street, lighting off bottle rockets in the middle of the street.
Can I just interject for a moment here? I seem to recall a number of stories about California catching fire a lot over the last few years. Are authorities not just a little bit nervous about all of the fireworks?
Oh yeah, I mean the community where I work, Yorba Linda, has a ban on fireworks, and there's a fine of $1,000 if you use like illegal fireworks, and a lot of other communities have that same fine. I suspect that that's something that is not easily enforceable, because God knows, I think Huntington Beach had a ban as well on fireworks, and these bottle rockets that go up, you know, a couple hundred feet, they come down, and I saw some embers on a street as I was crossing a street, you know, like hot parts that were still like semi-burning right on the pavement. And I read a story about how a carport, four cars, and a condominium were burned down in Huntington Beach last night, I think, from, you know, the illegal fireworks. So, pretty crazy situation all in all, you know?
Yeah, I can't imagine that doesn't just make people crazy.
Well, it sort of reminded me, with the sounds that we were encountering as we walked like about a half an hour to our pickup point last night after the fireworks, I felt like I was in the middle of a Purge movie almost, you know? Because people just kind of lose their inhibition on 4th of July night for some reason. And, you know, just stuff is flying all over the place, you know?
And it really there only takes a spark.
Not very much at all. I mean, fortunately, it's not too dry yet here in Southern California. But then we're only in early July. And we had record rainfalls, but that also means that more stuff grows, and that means that there's more stuff that can die off and catch fire once, you know, it's come September or whatever whenever the fires start, you know.
Oh, and by the way, how's the new gig going?
Very well, actually. Thank you. Yeah, it's it's going to be an adjustment. I'm trying to figure out how to make my money stretch because for this particular month, I only got paid like 3 weeks out of the month. We get paid once a month.
Ouch.
As opposed to bi-weekly. Yeah. Yeah. So,
You're not doing entailments for hickory nuts or anything, are you?
Explain.
Atticus Finch, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, okay.
He was working on Mr. Cunningham's entailment, and Mr. Cunningham didn't have no money, so he brought him a sack of hickory nuts.
Okay. No, I don't think my boss would take hickory nuts as a as a retainer fee, as far as I know. But once the next month comes by, that'll be better because that's when my pay, you know, will substantially increase. But
so are you doing basically the same kind of litigation, or is this different?
Yeah. No, same stuff. In fact, I had a client who it was a carryover from my old job, and he had a criminal sentencing that was scheduled for June 17th. My first day on the new job here was June 11th. And this guy, you know, decided he'd be kind of slick. You know, when you're sentenced from a, in the federal system, and probably the state as well, there's interviews that you have before sentencing, like some weeks before sentencing.
Yeah, for the pre-sentence investigation report.
Exactly. And that's especially important when you've agreed to pay restitution. In this case, my client had agreed to pay, you know, over $492,000 of restitution to account for his tax loss. And he was very selective in what he chose to disclose to the probation department. You know, he disclosed his rental properties that he owned in his own name, but failed to disclose a property that he had purchased in the name of his wholly owned LLC in Texas while he was on bail.
Just slipped his mind.
Yeah, while he was on bail. So it was like about $292,000 loan that he took out to buy that. And his story was that was a company that he had helped his foreman to start. And he had provided his credit because the foreman couldn't qualify for a loan. And the foreman would start this construction job on the new site, you know, where, so... and he forgot some other things. He forgot to disclose the fact that he did not pay rent, but instead paid a mortgage payment with regard to his wife's property that was owned with the wife and another gentleman. He didn't have an interest in that directly, but his wife did. But so anyway, what started out as a likely a year and a day sentence, which would have meant he would serve about maybe 10 months in jail, turned into a two-year sentence. The government recommended 33 to the statutory maximum of 36 months, and we got the judge to go for 2 years. But he cost himself, we calculated, about $19,000 in attorney's fees because of the extra filing he had to do due to his failure to be completely transparent to probation office. It's pretty much the same.
And that's one of those moments where no matter how plainly you advise them, listen to me, I'm not kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
And they do it anyway, and you just...
Well, yeah, exactly, Bob. And it gets to the point where do you have to do a background investigation of your own client, you know, to make sure they're disclosing all their assets to the probation department? I mean,
well, okay, that sort of segues us into a different story. The census business.
Mm-hmm.
When the U.S. attorney, I mean, and we're talking about U.S. attorneys who, you know, might be career types, right? I mean, we're not talking about political appointees. We're talking about the people who did this last year, are going to do it next year, and hope to keep doing it until they get to retire. So
right.
Presidents come and presidents go, AGs come and AGs go, and, you know, right. you're a staff attorney.
Exactly. Yeah.
And when you walk into court and you look at the judge and you say, well, Your Honor, my client's nuts. And your client is the president of the United States.
Yeah. That's kind of tough to say.
Because
that,
in the wake of the Supreme Court ruling about the stupid census question, Commerce and DOJ pretty much folded its tents.
Right.
And then Nitwit Nero sends out a tweet and says, "We haven't given up. We're going straight to the Supreme Court. We may have to use an executive order." And so, what's his name? Judge Hazel, I think, in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Gave the government until today. he said, up speaking. I don't know why. I got to stop that. It sticks. But he gave him till today to put in writing that they promised they were never, ever, no way, nuh-uh, no how, going to put a citizenship question in the census. And the person who got sent in there couldn't do that.
Right. Of course not.
And in almost, it's not entirely unprecedented, but it was pretty surprising. The judge didn't waste any time and said, okay, well, I'm going to grant discovery to the plaintiffs so that they can dig around in there and find your boss's racist intent.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, and I, word has it that the Wilbur Ross is in trouble now because of this whole census thing. You know, as far from the standpoint of keeping his job, he's also in trouble in terms of, you know, a possible perjury, is my understanding.
Oh, I would love nothing more than to see him in the dock. But then right? And
Well, this whole thing about the census, Trump is talking now about, you know, printing a supplemental publication just for that question. So you have the main questions, and then you have a special insert. It's like, give me a break, you know?
It's for brown people only, open here.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I, you know, again, that was only half of the strategy. The other half was the racial gerrymandering, which was upheld by the Supreme Court, you know?
Yep.
I mean, that shit weasel Republican in, the Republican statistician in, I think, North Carolina or whatever, who died, and then
his daughter dropped the dime on him.
Found the hard drive with all the other additional information. I mean, that wasn't enough to convince the Supreme Court to withhold its decision. I mean, you know, I'm surprised old Balls and Strikes Roberts didn't just say, oh yeah, the census question, sure, you can ask if you know, you can ask if somebody's a citizen, no problem, you know? So, you know, I mean, at least half of the strategy is not working, at least for now. I mean, I wouldn't put it past Nitwit Nero to try and do an executive order requiring the, you know, the Census Bureau to include a question.
But you can't executive order your way around the Supreme Court.
No, you can't, but it's not going to stop him from trying. And he'll force the courts to say, nah, you can't do that. We're enjoining this. You know, he's done all kinds
of things. Okay, and I'm not trying to be obtuse or argumentative. When the Supreme Court says stop and he says no, what happens then?
Dictatorship.
Yeah, well, you get back to the days of Andrew Jackson. You know, the Supreme Court, you know, Judge Marshall has spoken, now let him enforce it. Yeah? He's rendered his decision, now let him enforce it. We're back to that, you know? Except in a much more, you know, complex world, you know, with a lot more, you know, more dangerous world in many ways, you know? So.
And it doesn't help, you remember... Chip Roy from Syphilis Springs or Chlamydia Creek or whatever it was?
Roy.
Chip Roy. He's a big time maggot.
Right.
And he said, it's the lawyers advising him. Trump should just ignore them completely. Print the census with the questions and issue a statement explaining why. Because we should. Done.
Oh, jeez. Oh, what a genius, you know?
Well, right, but I mean, we chuckle and we, what an idiot. But the idiots are running things. I mean, yes, he's not. Yes. He's in the House. But the fact of the matter is, it would be, you know, if the Supreme Court said don't, and he did, you can't get any more impeachable than that.
No, you can't, but we know it's not going to happen, Bob. You know, I've seen this movie before. You know, with Reagan and Pappy Bush and Shrub, you know, and now Trump. But I mean, it's so much more blatant and so much more out in the open now, which, you know, you'd think would make it worse. But I don't know. I think, you know, certainly GOP voters have become desensitized to that idea. And, you know, it's sort of like principles be damned. I'm on the red team, damn it. You know, I'm a red shirt. Beam me up, Scotty, or don't, actually.
You know, it's been more than 30 years since the last time the Republicans won the popular vote in a presidential election. And yet, get this, they have appointed 15 of the last 19 Supreme Court justices.
Jeez. Yeah. Right. Clinton got two, and Obama got two, and those are the four that are serving right now in the so-called liberal wing, which really isn't that liberal. It's more like common sense, you know?
It's what the people want.
Well, I mean, I've maintained all along that there's no such thing as a liberal Supreme Court judge, but
no.
Because they are all, then there's that word, institutionalist.
Right.
But nothing, you know, nothing like the Warren Court by any stretch of the imagination. No.
I mean, I must say I expected a lot worse from this past Supreme Court term, you know, as far as decisions that were, let's say, illiberal or anti-democratic, you know, or pro-business, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, I was pleasantly surprised that there weren't too many crappy decisions.
Oh, no, the crap is in the hopper. That's coming in the October
term.
They're
waiting for it. They're waiting for it this term. Yeah. They're waiting for it this term. And, you know, maybe some of these decisions, you know, obviously we talk about this all the time and talk is cheap, but maybe, you know, maybe if you take away a woman's right to choose, it's going to mobilize the voters to get out there and throw these assholes out and get some.
Not when you consider that 52% of white women voted for Obama.
Voted for Trump, you mean?
I mean, voted for Trump. I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Voted for Trump. That's going to make that a steep hill to climb.
Well, the real steep hill, you guys, is what Wisconsin. What did they come up with? Like 49% Democrats and like 60% or you know, here in Ohio, 51%. You know, the U.S. House, 51% went to Republican, but somehow they have 75% representation. You know, you can vote your ass off, but if your vote has been nullified, and that's the biggest problem we're facing.
Right. That's the whole point of the exercise is to keep people from voting.
Right, exactly, because they can control
nice white neighborhoods. Better. People walk in, vote, walk out. Took them 5 minutes. On the other hand, if you are in a neighborhood of color, there's probably a tenth of the voting devices, and the lines go around the block.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, where Republicans are concerned, these are features, not flaws.
Right. Exactly. You got it.
Yeah. Elbert in Rhode Island says what they need to do is tell Dope 45 that they'll let him add the question if he pays for the extra paperwork. Plus, he has to pay for it with only cash on the barrel head.
There you go.
Yeah.
That'll never happen.
Well, I personally think we need to send him a bill for yesterday's kerfuffle. But, again, he's a deadbeat.
Oh, my God. That was too much. I have not seen any of the footage. I'll have to look at that on the Internet. It's probably making me laugh my ass off.
Well, you'll be okay until you come to the part about the airports, and then you'll just fall. Then you'll just go to pieces.
I mean, thank God we were able to defeat the British Air Force. I mean, otherwise we'd really be fucked. We'd be speaking English. We are
English.
Speaking English.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank God for Lafayette and the French, or we would be speaking English. Oh, never mind.
Right. Yeah. What's up, Joe?
Hey, Rick. Oh, man. I was kind of worried about you guys down there with that earthquake and fireworks. Jeez, I thought the whole state was going to go up in there.
Yeah. No, the earthquake was fun. It was sort of like, you know, being on a ship at sea, just kind of rolling, kind of a steady roll. I mean, my cats weren't that afraid, really. They kind of looked up and wanted to know what was going on. The dog did the same thing, but it really wasn't that. It wasn't like the jarring thing that we got, like, for the Northridge quake. And that's because the epicenter was so far away. And so the waves that traveled to us 150 miles away were the longer waves that were more, you know, not the frequency was lower frequency waves. You know, you get more gentle type of waves as opposed to the, you know, the up and down, stuff where you can actually get hurt, you know. You can get jarred, pull muscles or whatever, you know. Break bones.
Pull
a
muscle.
Yeah. No, seriously, if you're in bed and you all of a sudden get up out of bed when a violent earthquake is happening, it's pretty scary. Northridge,
you're back in bed.
Scary. Yeah, that happened like 3:40 in the morning on, I think it was like was it March 17th of 94 or something like that? Yeah, it was in March, I think.
Yeah. Oh, the one in Northridge?
The Northridge quake.
Holy crap.
The 6.8, I think it was.
Well, here's some ironic stuff. That was actually in February, Rick. We were having temperatures back in Ohio during that month of like minus 20. And I'm sitting, and then I see that earthquake and I think, well, what is it? Minus 20 or earthquake and your whole house is in the crevice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
actually, now that you mentioned it was February, but it was about February 17th. And we had a lot of heat in that month, I remember. It was a warm month. I think it was. I get my earthquakes confused. I know one time we had what we called the shake and bake earthquake in like, it was the 80s, the late 80s, like October 1st. And it was like 100 degrees in LA that day. And then we got an earthquake like maybe at, I don't know, 4:30 in the afternoon or something like that. I think that was might have been the Whittier and Arrows quake, which was centered just east of East LA, that area there. You wonder. I mean, I think there may be some correlation between big earthquakes and unusually high temperatures. I don't know for sure. I'm not a geologist.
I'm so not a scientist, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So last week, last Friday, you were mentioning, you're talking to Bob about what they discussed during the pageant, and I went duh when you said, you know, you want to talk about, I think it was the Electoral College, and I guess I said that because there's just certain thing that the corporate people who hold the pageant, you know, they don't want you talking about gerrymandering. They don't want you talking about the Electoral College. They don't want you talking about net neutrality.
They don't want you to talk about the structural problems, in particular, yeah. Joe. They don't want conversations about the structural problems of the country, because the structure of the country is working for them, and they don't give a tinker's damn if it's not working for the vast majority of everyday workaday America.
And that's exactly right. And then you get you talk about the Electoral College, and you get people like Gomer and Gertrude down there in nowhere, North Carolina, and Gomer says to Gertrude, "What does this out there Electric College? Is that some old high elite Obama school?"
Yeah.
I mean, these people—that's
one that Edison founded.
Yeah, exactly. These people don't know what. And most Republicans, I'd be willing to bet, don't know what the fuck the Electoral College is, or how.
Down south, the only question is whether or not they play in the SEC.
Yeah.
Right. Electric State University or whatever. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. I was shocked. I heard Desi and Brad, I heard on one of the things, said that they actually spent 15 whole minutes on climate change. I was shocked that you got that much in there.
And and like I mentioned the other night, there's a big push on for a climate change debate, where climate change is and things related to climate change are all we talk about. And, you know, the DNC's position has been, no, we're not going to do a single topic debate. And you can halfway, at first blush, it sounds kind of shitty. But if you want to have a, if you start having one single topic debate, you have another single topic debate. And then, but is that necessarily so bad? You know, 2 hours on 2 hours on foreign policy, 2 hours on healthcare, 2 hours on the climate.
Yeah, well, was there a swimsuit contest in the pageant? Because I noticed Beto and Biden were pretty much underwater the whole time.
So. Ah.
There you go, Joe. Yeah. Way to go.
And, you know, it's going to be one Biden story after another until he either drops out or gets the nomination. And if he gets the nomination, it's going to be one Biden story after another all the way to November 3rd. I think it was Agence France-Presse, I think, that I saw resurrect the story of one of Biden's son's problems with crack cocaine.
Oh, boy.
And they recounted the story of how he got a gun put to his head until they realized he was a customer and not, you know, some suit. This was years ago, of course, but you know, nonetheless, so, everything gets dredged up.
So speaking of Biden, I saw that he had a one-on-one interview with Chris Cuomo on CNN, and they're featuring that, I think, either tonight or tomorrow night. And they aired, like, extensive excerpts of that interview. That's obviously an attempt to rehabilitate Biden after his miserable debate performance. And... you know, I mean, he sounded pretty good in the interview. I mean, just from what I could tell, from maybe the 10 minutes or so of it that I was able to watch. So, I mean, clearly the mainstream media loves the guy, loves Biden. I think kind of like they liked Trump last election cycle, you know?
Well, they want a battle of septuagenarians.
Yeah.
See, Trump is not the only one for whom the WWE format works. It works great for the multimillionaire for-profit media as well. In fact, if they could get the two candidates to swing folding chairs at them and enter a steel cage, well, no irony there.
Morton Downey Jr. Remember that Morton Downey Jr. show?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
By the way, it was awfully nice, I thought, of the Secret Service to set up chain link fence yesterday so the maggots would have something to hold on to during the lightning storms.
how many maggots attended that event anyway? Is there any estimate?
I didn't go looking.
Well, Trump said there were like 2 million. They were backed all the way down to town. You know, he said at least 2 million. It's the largest crowd there ever was. You know, it's the greatest 4th of July. There was probably millions, according to Trump.
2 million? Yeah, right.
Yeah. It was the greatest July 4th, the celebration it ever had. And oh yeah. Tanks. Oh, it was great. Yeah. I love how this asshole sat there and told these, now you young people, it would be wonderful if you joined the service and you served your country. Shut the fuck up, Donnie. What did you do? You were just raping women and playing with your, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
and speaking of which, Because the goddess of irony, at the beginning of the thing last night, I was describing some of the videos. They were walking on stage, and I said, well, there's Melanoma, and she wore clothes to the event, so we'll just put that part in the win column. Then by the end of the program, she's a wet T-shirt contest. I suppose you've seen the photos.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
Can you?
Over Facebook.
Right, and all we have to do is we get to play that game again. What if Michelle Obama had done that?
Yeah.
The Jerry Falwell Jr.'s hair would be on fire.
Well, the difference there, Bob, is she would have been wearing a wet T-shirt while black. That's the difference.
Well, the difference is the while black part.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Meanwhile, just because, well, you'll get a case. Since we're talking about phony history and everything, David Barton is the right wing's most visible, long time fake historian. He got one of his books pulled because it was so full of, you know, lies. And by way of trying to explain our relationship with our sacred holy Second Amendment, well, just check this out.
A lot of people say if the Second Amendment were written today, it would be different because they didn't take into account, for example, firearms that might have had higher capacity or were more effective. Do you have any answers for those folks?
Yeah, you remember they had 10-shot muskets. Remember the muskets they used back then?
Yeah.
Not quite.
Well, no, I remember they also had the pepper box revolver, right?
They did.
The puckle gun, the Girondoni air rifle.
See, the deal was you have a right to defend yourself.
Right.
Whatever, you have a right. So the biggest weapon in that day would have been a cannon.
Yes.
Hands down, cannon. You're allowed as a citizen to own cannons.
Yes, that's that was the letter of Markham and Reprisal to, was it from...
You have Madison, you have all the... As a matter of fact...
Yeah, was it Madison?
Well, when you go back in state laws provide for it. So the founding fathers talked about it because what they did was said, hey, don't sit your cannon off within a mile of town. We're tired of town getting blown up.
Right.
You know, but you can have a cannon. Whatever the government had, you could have.
Right.
And that was the belief because we might have to take on the government someday. We hope that never happens. But in case it does, we defend ourselves from anything that comes after us, whether it's from foreign or domestic, whether it's a gang, whether it's a government, whether it's, again, a crazy uncle.
Right.
We don't care. So for them, there were...
The one thing he doesn't say is slave uprising, and that's what all those people were thinking.
There's no limitation on what you could use or how you could defend yourself.
So they were okay with cannons, though.
They're okay with cannons. And that was that would be our equivalent of high-capacity magazines or machine guns or anything else.
It could be
equivalent
to a tank.
It could be equivalent to a tank.
Yeah. That's what these loonies believe. That American citizens need cannons and tanks. Oh, and machine guns. How do you get there? How do you get that crazy?
And I just love these. You know, you talk about guns. I just love these people. I work with this idiot, this Trumper at work. And I say, okay, Frank. Okay, you got your guns. You got your semi-automatic guns. You've got every gun you possibly can have. You say, oh, this guy's got probably 200 guns. And I said, why do you have these guns? Well, he said, I want to protect myself if the government tries to come and take them. And I just say, you know, Frank, if the government tries, how many guns can you shoot with two hands? And do you think you're going to outlast, Blackwater? You're going to think you're going to outlast a robot when they send the robot in to blow the living shit out of you? Do you ever think about, we shouldn't be, Second Amendment. There's just no talking to these fucking people. Honest to God.
No, And they don't take into account that who had the wherewithal to own a cannon. How rich did you have to be to own an artillery piece? It didn't come cheap. And
you
in
have
the
case, special order it.
Well, sure you would. You'd have to order it from an armory. And in most cases, it would be the local militia's cannon. I mean, they might have one at a race course to start the horse race or something. I don't know. Or call people to dinner or let them know that the. But it's the fact that he says...
We had bells for.
It's the fact that he says machine guns that becomes really chilling. Machine guns. Because, the AR-15s just aren't deadly enough. And meanwhile, I mentioned a few minutes ago the Proud Boys and Patriot Prayer and the 3%ers and the Oath Keepers infiltrating law enforcement in the military. Well, one Proud Boys member, a guy by the name of Donovan Flippo, he got busted for an attack against an Antifa activist from 2018. And lo and behold, Nicholas Carafella, C-A-R-E-F-E-L-L-E, he's the guy who made bail for Donovan Flippo, the Proud Boy who got arrested for an assault. Carafella was an employee of Geo Group. And guess what? Geo Group is a private prison company that runs concentration camps for ICE. So, yeah, the infiltration is real. And, you know, it's kind of like cockroaches. If you see one, you've got 1,000. Terrifying shit. Because you only find out about this the hard way. Oof. A note coming in from Dave from the Blind in Talibandiana. Hey, y'all, considering the Second Amendment, I once was watching C-SPAN when none other than fat, dead Tony Scalia himself said that the Second Amendment was not absolute. He cited an early case, and I'm sorry, I forget which one it was, that basically said you could not have a weapon that was a weapon of intimidation. His example was a battle axe. Because you could not carry a battle axe down the middle of the street because it was considered a weapon of intimidation. A cannon, a military weapon, could have been possessed by the local militia, but I question whether or not any sane government or by the 18th, 19th, or 20th century, whatever, would... let wholesale possession of cannons just go on as opposed to something like a signaling cannon. Yeah. You know, those little tiny cannons that they put on the bows of sailing ships back in the day and stuff. Kyle writes in, my reaction to last night's fascist masturbatory circle was equal parts laughing and being scared shitless. What the fuck is happening? I feel like this is all some kind of movie, that it's not real because he's too fucking stupid to be president, and yet he's pushing us to a fucking shooting war with Iran or not, and chipping away at our rights and locking children up in cages. It's equal parts hilarity and fucking outrage. I'm fatigued. Jesus, we have to end this. We can't last another 4 years. Well, if we work our happy little asses off and overcome all the gerrymandering and everything else, we've only got to work until January 20th, 2021. And that is a year and... well, it's a year and a half away. But God, there's plenty... but, you know, the larger point is well made. He can do plenty of mischief in those 18 months. Plenty of mischief.
Yeah, the ICE raids are starting after the weekend, supposedly.
That's what I read. And there are there's a coordinated effort. Jude was telling me about this. She wrote in a couple of nights ago. There's a coordinated effort for rallies and protests and demonstrations all around the country. I can't remember what date it is. But they want to get some shit started, there's no doubt about it.
So, Bob, did you, in the Hilo Hollers of West Virginia, the high school you attended, did you have what was called the National Forensic League?
I didn't go to high school in West Virginia.
Oh, that's right, Bama, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't recall that. We had a thespian society, and we did all kinds of different speech and stuff, but I don't recall an actual debate club.
Yeah, we called the National NFL, National Forensic League, and high schools every Saturday would go compete in things like debate, prose and poetry, improv.
Yeah.
And so happens, I would compete against Lori Lightfoot. She was at in Massillon High School, and we were just on the other side of Canton over in Louisville. And she was on the debate team back in the day. And I she looked very familiar when I saw her and I heard that name, and I finally put it all together. But so there you go. It's kind of a small world.
Wow.
She also shares Obama's birthday, which is pretty interesting, I thought. She, you know, being that she's in Chicago and that's where Obama emanated from. So a little trivia there.
Yeah, the mayor of Chicago, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Recently elected, yeah.
Oh, and Lee in New York asking, doesn't everyone have a cannon? How can an orchestra perform the 1812 Overture without one? I think it is written into the score. And doing our ciphering for us this evening, Lee says there's 565 days between today and January 20th, 2021. And that's 565 days of relentless work. No assumptions. And I'm kind of at sixes and sevens here. I made my little oath that I would not trash any of the candidates on the Democratic side because any one of them is better than Trump. But it gets a little more difficult every damn day.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
I mean, I just don't. I don't understand how we can have a conversation about the future when we're talking about having a nominee who's pushing 80.
Or a nominee that has, a voting pass that's, in line with Republicans.
Yeah, I saw somebody, I forget who it was, on Twitter, said, I'm beginning to think that Joe may have had far too much influence on Obama with his we've got to reach across the aisle bullshit. And that was why Obama moved so tepidly in some instances.
Yeah, probably right.
Oh, and by the way, Jude just let me know, it's Lights for Liberty, July the 12th, 7 to 10 p.m., whatever your local time is. So let's see, that's Friday. A week from today. So you can go to, let's see, what's the URL? Man, this old iPad's slow. LightsForLiberty.org. LightsForLiberty.org. Well, we'll see. I wonder. I bet you people will be participating at Netroots Nation. I'll have to keep an eye out. And we have entered the third hour of the program. We still have $305 to go to finish fundraising for the first week of July. $305, and then, if we can do that, then I can go about the business of finally getting my hotel room reserved and things like that. Gets a little worrisome. Let's move around a little bit. Steve, you've been awfully quiet in New York. Oh, and the thunder has been rolling through today. So the usual cautionary announcement obtains. If this program suddenly disappears, it will be because Frontier's connection ran under the bed and hid. So far, so good, but you never know with that bunch. Yeah, this is weird. I can't tell if I'm connected or not because of the way Frontier behaves. Yeah. Anybody there?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Everybody's just...
I just wondered what that was with going on with Steve. He's still in the room.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Chris, are you there? You know, I don't know. I'm getting the idea that maybe people are really worn out from yesterday. There's Chris.
Night, they're shitting off fireworks, eh, Chris?
Well, that too, yeah. It's been a lot of late nights this week, doing fun stuff, and yeah. Not much going on tonight, just chilling out tonight.
Oh, the rain just started here in time for one of the local rafting companies puts up a big fireworks display every 4th, and since the 5th was a Friday, they decided to do it on a Friday, and now it's pouring down the rain. Going to be some bummed out people. I think my grandkids are here for that.
Luckily, it rained down.
Are you going to see them this weekend?
Daytona. So I haven't got the race started yet.
Oh, by the way, for that that right-wing free speech rally tomorrow in D.C., they said they were expecting 1,000 people. They have one porta-potty. They may not be so proud after a couple of hours.
Man, that sounds illegal to me. You know, on a construction site, the law in California says you have to have one porta-potty for every 10 people on the site.
Damn.
Yeah, they
proud potters. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's now in chaos because apparently there's a love triangle involved between a bizarre maggot congressional candidate and the Proud Boys. Omar Navarro is the person named, and he says the woman who's now his it's hard to wrap your head around this stuff. The woman who is now his ex-girlfriend is the MAGA relationship expert Deanna Lorraine, which in itself sounds like a name at a, you know, for somebody at a drag bar. But he says Deanna's been doing coke and sleeping with the Proud Boys, I guess all of them. And he now, and Navarro now says, I cannot agree with the drug lifestyle they follow. Mm. Jack Posobiec and Mike Cernovich both declared, and you know, those are the Pizzagate guys, that they were bailing out of it.
Well, I heard Meghan McCain joined it, so.
Is she out at The View now?
Well, she said she's going to come back if they stop picking on her.
What? And by picking on her, we mean what? Pointing out when she's fucking wrong?
Lying. Yeah, she's lying.
Yeah.
Queen Snowflake herself, huh?
Exactly. Yeah.
So what happened with her in The View? I didn't even know she was off The View.
Oh, she's filled with pout rage.
Ah, okay.
There you go.
You know, I always thought that Democrats were the snowflakes up until, like, Trump became president. You know, that was the criticism that a lot of people had for Democrats. But it's like these fucking right wingers, they just cannot take it. They can sure dish it out, but, you know. You know, they have they call the ambulance at the slightest, you know, somebody serves them cold coffee or looks at them crosswise or whatever, you know, just the poor things, you know?
Yeah, and Trump, he's the master at it, man. That speech yesterday, he's, you know, we're the victims, we're the ones, yeah, I'm going to rescue you, yeah, yeah, okay.
I alone can fix it.
Yeah, after he breaks it.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Rick, we should tell him a story. You know, our you know, I call my stepson a fine young cannibal. My wife gets mad at me, and I said, she asked me, well, do you know what a cannibal is? And she says, it's one of the, no, a cannibal is someone who likes cannabis. Hey, Rick, should we tell the story how my wife smuggled the cannabis home from L.A.?
Maybe not if it imposes criminal liability. No, you shouldn't.
Aiding and abetting? Uh-oh.
Rick was an accomplice.
Well, you never know Agent Fred here, but...
What did you give to disguise the you put those, were those oranges? What were those, what did Star have in her backyard? What was she growing? Those lemons or oranges?
Lemons. She had lemons.
Yeah. So Rick said, put these lemons in there with the cannabis and it'll go right through. It did too.
Well, the lemons could get confiscated if you were going to, I guess if you're flying out of California, it's not so much of a concern, but if you're flying into California with produce, sometimes the produce police will, you know, prevent stuff from getting in because they don't want to have the California produce contaminated with out-of-state, you know, pathogens or bugs, or mostly bugs, you know, pests and so forth. So, but Bob is probably right. We'll just leave it at that. How's that sound?
Well, anyways, Bob, it was, you know, two Fridays ago, it was National Draft Day, and you failed to neglected to mention National Draft Day. You were talking about a meth-fueled attack squirrel.
Yes, I remember the meth-fueled attack squirrel.
Well, you know, I have a personal.
In fact, I think they're playing across the river tonight because no sooner did I think a band has already formed with that name.
there you go.
Yeah, National Draft Day is that's the longest day of the year, which is of course first day of summer, and since the giraffes have the longest. Next, they call it National Giraffe Day.
I had no idea it was National Giraffe Day.
Yeah, it's really a, yeah. Well, I personally have a giraffe that listens to the show. He's right here, Jeffrey. He's on the porch every time, and he's decided that, you know, he likes things that are high. Jeffrey likes things that are high because he stands 17 feet, and he wants to be on the high court.
You're really going a long way for this one, Joe.
So are you supposed to drink Long Island iced teas on draft day?
Well, you know, Long Island, Long Neck, it all works. And, you know, he likes to be high and stay high, so he's all for cannabis. A little known fact is giraffes have two hearts to pump all the blood to the top of the, you know, up the neck, and that's two more hearts than any Republican has. So I think he's got a real fighting chance. To get on the high court. I really
put him on the nomination list or send his name to who are those, the Federal Society, is that them, the one that has vetted all the vetted Kavanaugh and that crazy lady that's next up, that's next in the queue? Is it the Federal Society?
Yeah, that's the body, that's the vetted
body. Which reminds me, they've got the Federalist Society, but if you partake of the filthy morning habit, as do I, you know that that some dark money group has been running ads on that show, and of course the Standards and Practices Department there goes, ah, sure, the check cleared, what the fuck, why not? These ads, all these presidential candidates have a secret list of judges. Tell them, disclose the list.
Oh, Democratic candidates all have secret lists?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't think that's true.
Well, I mean, it's not a secret that none of them will appoint someone who is inimical to a woman's right to choose. That's not exactly a secret, is it? But it is the exact opposite of, I mean, the Republicans don't have a secret list. It's just that you can't get on the Supreme Court unless you're a member of the Federalist Society and have sworn undying devotion to basically unbridled, unregulated capitalism, and to try to undo a woman's right to choose.
Unless you're a Christian mullah.
Well, those two. So,
Yeah, you know what? I have no problem with stacking the court if we get the sweep in 2020 that we've been talking about. I have no issue. And it's like McConnell's out there screaming at the top of his lungs, oh, this is what the Democrats are going to do. They're going to play unfair. He's been playing unfair for a decade. Longer than that, maybe.
I know. Every time he says something like that, I wait to see if the little staffers and other senators are going to step back in case the lightning bolt finally comes down.
Yep. God, he's the worst piece of crap. Yeah, there's a lot of them, though. But he's one of the worst.
And by the way, I should have mentioned much earlier, the stress line is open to anybody who can't use Skype or can't use the link at headon.live. So, you know, feel free to use that, 844-843-4676, and it'll get you right in. I was connected to the Bluetooth earlier. Somebody called in, and as I was trying to repair with the Bluetooth, they hung up, so that happens. We do have some other stupidity to tap into for the evening. How about Virginia State Senator Amanda Chase? Again, Amanda Chase sounds like somebody you would meet down at the local drag emporium, but never mind. That's a great drag name, Amanda Chase. She's a gun goober. Big gun fan. And she declared that women get raped because they are naive and unprotected and don't carry guns. Wow. The brilliance.
Well, she's a credit to her gender, isn't she?
As she said, it's those who are naive and unprepared that end up raped. Sorry, but I'm not going to be a statistic scoffing at my rights and the rights of everyone else who protects themselves. I'm a champion for women, their right to protect themselves and their right to their opinion, even if I may not agree, but will not tolerate the bullying or chastising the rights of the Second Amendment. I didn't know the Second Amendment had any rights. Jesus, these people. Meanwhile, on the other hand, she opposes the Equal Rights Amendment, and she refers to her revolver as my little Equal Rights Amendment.
What is she, Phyllis Schlafly reincarnated?
I guess. But she said, I'm trying to figure out how a gun prevents a rape. Especially in an ambush situation. Or the situation like with the little 16-year-old girl, the story that we had a few days ago, who was raped by a 16-year-old boy in a darkened basement when she was incapacitated by alcohol.
Yeah.
Because the counter argument is that, well, she was drunk, so she deserved it. Jesus.
What was she wearing?
Right, well, precisely. And that's what the septuagenarian judge got up to. Oh, and by the way, because the weather was so overcast in D.C. last night, have you seen pictures of the smoke?
From the fireworks?
Yeah.
No, I know I have.
People couldn't even see the fireworks.
Yeah, I did hear about that. I heard that they couldn't see. They're invisible.
But one of the most amazing photographs to emerge from the evening was a picture of the Washington Monument looking like a giant Klansman.
Ooh.
Two blinking red eyes and a pointed top, surrounded by the glare of like red fiery, right.
Oh, my God. How fitting.
It was, the goddess of irony was busy yesterday. Let's kind of go over to the stress line. I think I've got somebody connected. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yes.
Hey, it's Jude.
Oh, hey, Jude. How are you, dear?
Well, you said it was okay to call in because it's just calling in to a friend.
Right, exactly. It's just neighborly conversation.
And I wanted to, you know, it was so much fun helping you at the Mike Malloy barbecue.
Oh, I couldn't have done it without you. You were, and it was a blast.
Very much so. Well, you know, I wanted so much to go down to El Paso, but it just flight things are so expensive. But I wanted to put out to the Horn family if they go onto that website, Lights for Liberty, it gives a beautiful synopsis of what, and it's kind of an international event. They're going to be at the, I think it's the Clint Detention Center for the children. But on the website, it was the first time I saw any kind of gathering, because I try to do that with Women Standing to encourage individuals that you don't have to be out in the street. You can be in your home, in front of your property. It's really the intention. It's the alignment of all of us. And for a lot of people, they don't really...
Yeah, it's the mind, among other things, it's the mindfulness.
Exactly. Exactly, Bob. So, and like I said, I was so hoping to go down and, you know, we could have made connections and you could have talked to people and let the, you know, the family know about it. But it's, you know, everyone I talked to me, it's one of the most quintessential issues occurring, and we have so many. It's like, you know, coming out, diving into the water and coming out of the water and just being just above your nose so you can breathe, and everything around is so complicated and so heavy and so dark. But I do think that because of how we care for one another and our persistence, you know, I have to hold on to that. Women Standing started back in 2006 because of Mike. Mike brought up on his program, there was an article in the New York Times, and it had a photo. I don't know if he was with Sirius, or I can't remember which, or 1090 AM out of Seattle. But there was a photo of Israel had attacked Lebanon, and there was a young mother being dug out holding her three-month infant in her hands. And Mike was so distraught because of it. And I was working in a little laundromat there in Fremont, just outside Seattle. And I went across the street to a wonderful fellow, Moses, his store, and got a copy of the New York Times. And the photo was so riveting that I ended up grabbing Gab, and she was, you know, Gabrielle was little at the time, and we went out and stood on the North 44th Bridge and just stood there, and it became part of what the movement was all about. And so when there's issues like this, especially with, you know, children, it grabs at our hearts, and I don't want people to think that we're impotent, that we're not capable of doing things, because I think collectively there's so much, even in the midst of so much darkness. So if those, you know, that are listening are interested to go on to that Lights for Liberty, I think it will really kind of open up their hearts and prepare them for something very important a week from today. So that's my thought for the afternoon.
Well, I'm very glad that you called in, and you'll notice that you're surviving nicely, right?
I'm sitting in the midst of a whole bunch of lavender that I planted, so I thought that would ground me and make me be comfortable. So, anyway, I love you, dear heart.
And, well, have a wonderful weekend, and I will keep an eye out for anybody participating when I'm in, because that'll be Philly, and I wouldn't be surprised if there isn't someone doing something along those lines.
Yeah, it's just, you know, just being present, just being aware, I think is extremely important. And so thanks for the time.
Oh, you're welcome, Jude. Have a lovely weekend, and hopefully we'll talk soon. See how easy it is?
And my love, it is. My love to the family, Bob.
Oh, thank you, and ours to you, Jude. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. That is the lovely and wonderful Jude out in the great Northwest. One of the sweetest, kindest, most outreaching spirits that I know, beyond a doubt. So I think Well, we just lost one internet line, and I don't know if I'm connected to the group anymore either.
I can hear you, Bob.
Okay, that's good. Cause it's,
I hear you.
Yeah, it's telling me connecting. Weird.
Hey, Bob, was Todd thinking about maybe meeting up with you in Philly?
No, no, Todd's down in South Carolina, Stan, so...
But that's his hometown, right?
Right, yeah. So I'll probably be getting some advice from Todd somewhere along the way.
There you go.
I know we're the thing is taking place at the Pennsylvania Convention Center in Center City, and all of the hotels down there. I'll be finding something.
Don't forget to stock up on Tasty Cakes and Scrapple.
Well, Tasty Cakes I can kind of get around here, so. That's covered. I have, and this may be deemed heretical, but I have a moral repugnance to Cheese Whiz.
Oh, no.
Somebody mentioned a reputable Philly cheesesteak place that wasn't one of those two big-named things, so I might find one there. I'd guess as close as it is to the water, there's probably some decent oysters to be had. Or seafood of some sort, and of course there's I'll be spending a lot of time there on Radio Row, but hopefully there'll be a little bit of time to get out and do some sightseeing. Still have to get over to Bartram's Gardens because that's Agnes's multi great grandfather's place, and Ben Franklin would come out and hang out and drink cider or whatever it was they were drinking, and talk to America's first environmentalist. Actually, first naturalist was the term they used, John Bartram.
That'll be some fun history there.
Yeah, I thought I'd visit Ben Franklin's grave and put a penny on that. That's what you're supposed to do, is put a penny on Ben Franklin's grave.
Not a $100 bill, huh?
No.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I just want to make sure you could hear me. I think I had my thing on mute and didn't even realize I did.
Yeah, because I checked in on you a little bit ago in Bupkis.
Yeah, no, I was away. My dad called, so I was away talking to my dad.
Ah.
By the way, I hope Roger's still listening. I'm jealous of the care package that he's sending you, Bob.
Maybe I'll send you some food porn pictures.
You know what?
That's just cruel, I know.
Yeah, that's just cruel, especially that tuna. And when he all of the different syrups, he kept going on. I thought, oh, man. Well, some people got it and some people don't.
Have you ever considered Oregon?
Living there?
Yeah.
No. And my next stop is Canada.
Oh, that's true.
Or New Zealand, depending on... We're actually exploring moving to New Zealand.
Do it while you're still young enough. They'll be interested in having you.
I know. I have one of my clients is a... he's a Kiwi, and he actually, with a friend of his, well, a colleague of his, started one of the biggest social media companies in New Zealand. And I mean that, as New Zealand companies go, it's one of the biggest there. It's not, we wouldn't call it a big company, but he and I talked about it, and he actually had some suggestions on some stuff I could do there that wouldn't be too hard to get some sort of sponsorship. So we'll see what we'll see. Cause Canada's having a serious, serious rightward shift right now. With the guy who became premier of Ontario, there are some seriously nutbally things going on in Quebec, and Justin Trudeau has been a complete disappointment. I think he's got approval ratings in the 20% range. Plus, he hasn't really done anything. Big disappointment. But we'll see what we'll see. And if the Conservatives win, and I believe the election's in August, Leo's a little bit scared about what they could do to the immigration laws.
Well, I'm sure right now some right winger up there is working on figuring out a way to make Canada more in line with the brutality of the United States.
Well, yeah, the guy who's head of the they're called the Progressive Conservatives, which is they changed their name to that.
Well, that's just a little psychopathic.
Yeah, but the guy who's the head of the party in the House of Commons is Doug Ford. I can't remember. I always get Doug and his brother mixed up. But a Doug Ford acolyte, and apparently, what I know about Ford is he actually makes Trump look like a Rhodes Scholar. We're talking serious nitwittery with this guy. And from what I understand, that's, I don't say likely, but it would not be unlikely that he's the next prime minister. And then there's been some scandals with Trudeau with this, I don't know if anybody knows, if followed at all, about this contractor in Quebec where they were essentially, the way, what it looks like is that Trudeau and his directed his attorney general to get involved in a investigation up there to basically stop it. And it's been quite a row, as they say, in the Commonwealth countries.
Jesus.
Yeah, so, you know, I guess as much as I don't like to say it, fascism is on the march.
Yep.
I mean, you know.
So. Mexico, you're our only hope, huh?
Seems that way. Or, well, I was going to say Germany, but Germany seems to be having a resurgent right. But a real, I mean, that those are...
Yeah, they're not kidding.
Yeah, those are the genuine right-wingers over there.
That's the larger problem. There's nowhere in this world that it is not on the march. You know, you mentioned New Zealand. That was a Kiwi who murdered all those people in those two mosques.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's there for the finding in Australia. It's there for the having in Canada. I'm sure there are right-wing assholes in Chile.
Pinochet leftovers. Oh yeah, Argentina seems to wobble back and forth, right?
Yeah.
When you have Bolsonaro in Brazil.
Yeah, and I guess I guess Glenn Greenwald is claiming persecution now from the Bolsonaro government for exposing corruption in the Brazilian government.
And him and some of the stuff that I hear about what's going on there and how I don't know if I told you, my partner's from Brazil, and he's like, he doesn't want to go back. He has no desire to even step foot in that country.
Well, you know, Flavio has opined on it from time to time as well, because I think his family, when he was a kid, I think Flavio's family actually had to flee Brazil.
Yeah, he would have been born under the dictatorship, because the dictatorship was up until 84.
Right.
Yeah.
Lula's in prison, right?
Uh-huh. You know, I got to tell you, it's interesting. I hear a fair amount about the politics there from Leo, and because he stays abreast of it. He liked Lula at least for a while, but he has nothing good to say about the Workers' Party. And especially Husefi, or I'm sorry, that's the Brazilian way I pronounce it, Rousseff. You know, who he always said that she was just an idiot. I don't know. I mean, Brazil is one of those places you're not quite sure what to believe. I don't think Lula was the innocent person that he's being made out to be, but I do think the little bit that I've understood and Sam Cedar's show, Sam Cedar's co-host, Michael Brooks, whom I don't care for generally, but he does a lot of reporting on Brazil, and he's had a lot to say about that. And I think a good portion of what he's of what he reports, and he has a, there's a guy he has from Brazil who has a website down there that does or up here that does Brazilian news, and they basically count Lula a political prisoner.
I think Lula's got some corruption with the gas station deal and all that. I think, you know, it sounds like maybe it was a bit overblown, but nonetheless, I think he was doing some money laundering of his own through that gas station, whatever it was that deal was.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is as much as we look at our government and see it as corrupt, any number of countries around the world that are, you know, developing countries or...
Oh, yeah, they've got us beat by a mile.
Oh, they look at us and say, what are you talking about? And that being said, it's like, it's almost the unfortunate thing, corruption is baked in the cake in a lot of places. So it's the issue is not corrupt and not corrupt, it's how much.
Yeah.
And it's degrees, and you say, okay, how corrupt, I mean, Bolsonaro, it seems to be corrupt beyond measure, with his, you know, his one of his sons has been doing shit. I think one or two of them are members of their, I think it's called the House of Deputies, I think is what the lower house is. They have a Senate and a House of Deputies. And I think that one or two of his sons are in the House of Deputies, and there's all kinds of shenanigans going on. Plus the other issue is too, you know, you're talking about a country that's only been quote unquote democratic since 1984. And again, as much as we have issues with our country, we have institutions that have for lack of a better term, congealed over almost 250 years. So, you know, and of course this shit bag is challenging all that, but the fact of the matter is, you know, our institutions are at least somewhat stable.
Well, they haven't cracked yet, but there's a lot of stress on all of our institutions in this country.
Oh, I 100% agree. 100%. You know, and I want to say something, Bob. I've been thinking about the whole Roe versus Wade stuff.
Yeah.
And I think what's very unfortunate is there's a misconception from a lot of people that if Roe's overturned, then that would make abortion illegal, and it wouldn't. What it would do is, of course, the Senate, it would just make it, each state could establish its own, you know, each state would be left to decide.
Right, and that's why the fetus fetish industry has worked so hard to control so many state legislatures.
Right. And I think, if you think about what you mentioned about women or white women, I think you said 52% supported Trump. I suspect the majority of those, or an awful lot of those white women, I can't imagine a majority of white women in California. Maybe I'm wrong, but I suspect an awful lot of that majority is in states that they don't want abortion. They don't want the right anyway.
I thought you were going to say the majority of them had probably had their own abortions.
Oh, that too. I've said in the past, I find abortion as a practice troubling. But as a man, I just feel like I have nothing to say in the decision. And it's interesting. I've had this conversation with people who call themselves pro-life, which I find so disgustingly disgusting. You know, I say, okay, what happens if you actually win this argument and the laws are conformed to what you – what do you want to happen? You want women to go to jail? Do you want doctors to go to jail? And I talked to this one guy about this, and I remember the look on his face says – he says to me, oh, I never thought of that. And I thought, well, you might want to think of that because, and
yeah, we're talking about real life, sure enough, no kidding consequences.
Yeah, real life, sure enough, consequences. And, I think there's this disgusting, I don't even know what you'd call it. I don't want to say misconception because that doesn't sound intentional, but this meme that women who have abortions, it's just like, it's like walking into the mall. Ah, well, I'm going to get an abortion today. Just walk in, walk out. Didn't want it.
Yeah, Manny, Petty, DNC.
DNC.
Right.
And I think to myself, shit, this is... You talk to even the most quote-unquote pro-choice person who's had one. I don't know that I've... I know, I've never seen anything but agony when they talk about it.
Well, you said earlier that you feel like as a guy you don't have anything to say. I'll take it a step further, and this is not me going after you, Steve, you know that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody has anything to say about it except the pregnant woman. Now, if she chooses to bring someone else into the conversation, a next-door neighbor, the father of the child, a husband, whomever. Obviously, it's a legal medical procedure, so a medical professional will be involved in the conversation. But that's as far as it goes. That's as far as anybody has any business in the conversation. Namely, none.
Yeah. No.
I'm a little bit. I'm a little bit further down the road maybe than some people. I don't see it as some sort of moral conundrum. I see it in most instances in which it is engaged as a net good, because someone would not choose to do this unless there was a rational decision process gone through that said that was the outcome that was needed. I mean, are we really going to argue that 14-year-old girls need to be having babies? I mean, are we in 19th century Appalachia all over the country here?
You know, that's a really good point. I think one of that story about the 11-year-old who was raped, that kind of went down the memory hole. I don't know what came of that case. Does anyone have an update on that case? What the hell?
I can't recall where it was, but they tried to keep her from having access until it would be too late for her to get one.
Yeah.
But it's always the other side that gets all worked up and starts talking about, scissors in the baby's neck, and they get off on it. It turns them on to think about it. It gives them some sort of lizard-brained endorphin response or some such.
And you know what, Bob? That tells me that it's not about life to them. It's about...
control.
It's about control. And, these people are the same people who are constantly telling you how horrible homosexuality is, yet they're always talking about it.
Well, it's like Matt in San Francisco said the other night. He said, I guarantee you that the ones who stare the longest and with the greatest lust in their eyes at a drag queen are the straight boys. The allegedly straight
mm-hmm.
boys.
Yeah. The Proud Boys.
Well, that's another kettle. Yeah, that's another kettle of
the first time I ever heard that name, the only thing I could think of was Belmont and Halstead in Chicago. Boys Town. That sounds like a bar that would definitely be there, right next to the manhole.
And by the way, I got some thanks to send out. We are now down to $280 to go to finish the month. Thank you very kindly. I don't know if that was anonymous or not, so if it's not, let me know. But we got 280 to finish the week, and it would be wonderful in the last 15 minutes or so if that could happen. Another story that sort of slipped by, because so many stories slip by. A national security reporter by the name of Emma Best queried the FBI about its file on the neo-Nazi group Stormfront. You know, open records request, nothing. You know. So they wrote back to Ms. Best with the following. We were advised that the potentially responsive records, namely the records of Stormfront, the neo-Nazi group, we were advised that the potentially responsive records were not in their expected location and could not be located after a reasonable search. Following a reasonable waiting period, another attempt was made to obtain this material. This search for the missing records was also met with unsuccessful results. She tweeted the statement and said, FBI claims to have lost the file on the neo-Nazi group Stormfront. Sure, Jan.
Unreal.
How about that? The FBI can't find its file on the neo-Nazis.
It's unreal. It's absolutely unreal.
Well, it's the personnel files for the committee to re-elect Trump.
Well, I think there's probably more than it's more. That's more than just funny.
I didn't. I said it to be cynical rather than funny, but it's.
So, I got a question. So, is there any action going on with these subpoenas? You know, that are just hanging up in the air. Nobody's going to testify.
Well, they have to. They're going through the court system.
Okay. So there's action being taken, and it's winding itself way through the where they and are they still at the district court level?
No. It's at the appellate court level, and every level has a briefing schedule. So it can seem like nothing's going on, but they're writing briefs, they're writing reply briefs, and then there's the counter reply brief.
Well, are these all going to be in the Ninth Circuit?
No. One of them's, I think one or two of them are both in the DC circuit.
Okay.
And eventually, you know, that's why I figure we will have decisions on them, in time for the, you know, eventually they will petition for cert to the Supreme Court in the October term.
Now, Hope Hicks, her situation, I mean, she did go up there, she showed up, but she didn't say a fucking word, right?
Well, she was advised not to because the DOJ sent a phalanx of lawyers.
So, can she be in contempt of Congress?
If they vote that way. The other thing, Congress recently got a green light on the Emoluments Clause lawsuits because the Department of Justice wanted to suspend the litigation in order to pursue an interlocutory appeal, you know, an appeal in the middle of a case up to the Supreme Court. But Emmett Sullivan, the U.S. District Judge, denied the request and said, we're moving forward.
Good. That's good. Keep it moving. What's everybody's expectations of Mueller on the 17th?
I'm not harboring any.
No. He's not going to do an audiobook version of his.
If he wants to spend 10 hours reading his report, I'm game. Because the American people need to hear it.
Absolutely, they do.
I mean, if you read, you don't have to read very much of it to realize that I remember reading it, and there's all kind. This the whole notion of collusion is all over the thing.
Well,
that's why
no collusion. Yeah.
That's why Barr had to get out in front of it so much. He, I don't gonna say they let him, but he established the narrative that there was no collusion. Along those lines, I don't know if anybody saw. I don't know where I saw it, but there was a video. I think it was at one of Justin Amash's town halls where they asked a woman about it, and she says, "Well, I didn't even know there was anything negative. I thought it completely exonerated Trump." And they ask her where she got the, "Oh, I get my info from right-wing radio and blah, 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 blah." So there, that narrative, you know, is somewhat solid, at least among a number of people, that there's nothing in there.
Yep. 3% of the population have read the report.
I've read parts of it, it's very clear to me you have plenty of instances in which, and I get it, the whole notion of there's no criminal conspiracy because it didn't meet the statutory elements of a crime, but
conspiracy, right?
Yeah, conspiracy, but the notion of coordination, it's all over the place.
Well, and more importantly, though,
obstruction.
I wish we could just make the word collusion disappear.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it's a word.
Because the word we're looking for here is not collusion; it's conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the more, and God knows it's a challenge to make these determinations. But one of the more stupid things I've seen recently was a tweet from Jerry Falwell Jr. in which he announced that, thank God that the U.S. colluded with the Soviet Union in World War II to defeat Hitler. No shit. That ignoramus actually tweeted that. You know, there's a big difference between an alliance and a collusive relationship, because the collusive relationship contains as an element the impropriety of the association. The Sherman Antitrust Act was designed to keep corporations from colluding, conspiring to fix prices.
Mm-hmm.
And so that word, it's just like the phrase fake news. We're so far down the rabbit hole now, we don't even remember the origin of the term, do you?
Was it Kellyanne?
No. It was a term that was coined to describe disinformation that was promulgated over Facebook in advance of the 2016 election via stories that were just entirely fictional. Headlines like Pope Francis endorses Donald Trump for president. I'm not calling you out, but you can laugh, but it ain't funny, because it went around the world before the truth could get its shoes on.
Lies always do. Oh, Kellyanne was alternative facts.
Alternative facts.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
But fake news originally was about things that were said to promote Donald Trump, not things that were said to criticize him. And they Orwellized it, and lo and behold, like I said, nobody now remembers that it begins over stories like Pope Francis endorses Donald Trump for president. And in the earliest of investigations, those were the sorts of things they found.
Well, was the Pizzagate part of that as well?
Not really. That's a separate animal.
Yeah.
It was just specious propaganda, in most instances, catapulted by Russian troll farms and bot factories.
Hey, why didn't the guy who shot up the pizza joint, why didn't he get arrested?
He did.
He didn't get arrested?
Yeah, he did.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and by the way, while we're just catching up with the stupid, there were a bunch of maggots running around D.C. yesterday wearing T-shirts of John F. Kennedy Jr. wearing a maggot hat.
Oh.
Did you catch this one?
Well, that, that's that whole Q thing. Where
yes,
they think...
it, and then the next thing you know, there are John F. Kennedy Jr. wearing a maggot hat faces, you know, on little wooden sticks. Because they were absolutely certain that John F. Kennedy Jr., dead low these two decades or more, was going to reappear on the stage last night and work alongside Donald Trump to defeat the pedophiles. I feel like I feel insane even letting those words emerge from my mouth.
Second coming of JFK, huh?
JFK Jr.
JFK Jr., sorry. Unreal. This is crazy. This is just absolute madness.
And see, I think what it does is it inoculates the maggots for when we finally find out that Donald Trump has been, at some point in his life, a child sexual assault perpetrator.
Well, I think we know this.
I saw a tweet earlier today from Charles Blow, you know, the columnist at the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
And he just posted a question and said, so, are we just going to move on from the fact that the president has been accused of raping someone?
Yeah, that's halfway at least down the memory hole.
Well, he hasn't been just accused of raping someone. He's been accused of raping nearly two dozen women. And at no point in time has a prosecutor picked up the case and said, you know, we can't just keep ignoring these. We've got to move on one of these. And of all the things, you know, because I thought of this when you mentioned Mueller. Of all, Mueller said, well, we couldn't charge him with conspiracy because DOJ guidance, which is a bullshit cop-out, and I still say it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of all the things that he's done that's criminal, I mean, okay, I guess it's kind of a close call as to whether you should be able to indict the President of the United States for... campaign finance violations, you know, the ones that he committed when he was referred to by the SDNY as individual one. Okay. Mm-hmm. Rape is not one of those. If there is a solid case of rape to be brought against the President of the United States, you know, it's not Nancy Pelosi's fault that case has not been brought. That is a prosecuting attorney's case and a prosecuting attorney's fault. And in the case of this latest woman to bring this up, Steve, correct me, but is there a statute of limitations on first-degree felony assault in the state of New York?
To be honest with you, I don't know, although I will tell you...
I know there's not in West Virginia.
New York State just passed a law. In fact, my partner... My law partner, he and I were talking about this because somebody approached him about an assault case. I believe they just passed a law, and I don't know if it would apply in the Trump case, where essentially it added like 30 or 40 years to the statute of limitations, and in some cases just got rid of it.
Because, see, since she's published this in a book, there's this thing called prosecutorial discretion. And a prosecutor would have the right to call her in and take a statement from her. And she could, sure, she could bring counsel, and the counsel could say she doesn't have anything to say. And the prosecutor could say, okay, great, we'll use the testimony from her book. And you go into the grand jury and you come out with an indictment of Donald J. fucking Trump for fucking rape. And then... And that's the overall point that I'm getting to here. Then let that go to the Supreme Court and let that shitheel Brett Kavanaugh and Ann's boy Neil and Sammy Bad Breath and Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, and John Roberts. Let them say, no, the president being accused of rape, well, he's above that law, too. I want to hear those fuckers say those words. Because
man, that would be a whole new paradigm.
Yeah, that's not saying, you can't indict. These are just process crimes. No, this is rape.
Well, my question would be then, how far can Bill Barr's tentacles go as far as trying to squash that before it starts?
Well, he's Attorney General of the United States, not of New York.
Yeah, that wouldn't apply. And to be frank with you, Bob, I think depending on how the AG of New York, how they charged him, I don't know that the Supreme Court would have any.
Well, it wouldn't. For starters, it wouldn't be the AG. It would be the District Attorney of New York, the Manhattan DA. Because it happened in the Manhattan DA's jurisdiction.
Yes.
And recall that was, I don't know if it still is, but it was Cyrus Vance Jr. And he ran awfully close up to charges of bribery for letting Ivanka off the hook for Trump Soho.
Yeah, I don't think Cyrus Vance still is the but I mean, even more so, I don't see how that could go to the U.S. Supreme Court. On what grounds would the Supreme Court have standing to hear a challenge to him being indicted?
They would find a way, Steve. There would be some kind of maybe writ of prohibition requested by Trump.
Or they would claim it was an issue under the U.S. Constitution vis-a-vis the rationale for the Department of Justice rule. But
what they would do, Steve, is they would remove it from state court to federal court because he's a official of the U.S. government. That's what would happen. And then it would be decided by a federal court. And then it's a lot easier to get Supreme Court review in that.
And you know what?
But the larger point is, I want that to be a mess that gets started.
Throw it on the pile. Absolutely.
But here's the best part.
I want fuckers like Kavanaugh on the record. I've gone back and forth on this as to whether or not it is wise to let these bastards decide an issue like that. And I'm almost to the point where I say, make them own it. Don't let them sit there and smugly rub their little chins without it having to come to them. We have got to expose every last nook and cranny of Republican corruption in this country. Because if it's left to resprout anywhere, it will, and it will grow again, and it'll take the place. Anybody who has blackberries in their backyard know that.
Yes.
Let me ask this question. If that were to be removed to federal court, even if it were to be removed to federal court, given I'm not so sure they would do it for this reason. Given the final judgment rule, that would mean they would have to go through the entire trial, and he would have to be convicted. Otherwise, there'd be no. They would not have standing as a losing party to appeal.
Well, what happened, Steve, is they would remove it to federal court and then promptly file a motion to dismiss the indictment on the ground that a sitting president cannot be indicted by any, any judicial system.
It would be a 12-1 motion then.
Yeah. Well, sort of. It would be the
And then there would be no prosecutorial authority that would have the standing to take it to the Supreme Court. Because he would have private counsel for his defense.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody making the motion would have to be from the DOJ.
Yeah.
That's just.
You know what? But like you said, Bob, let them own it.
I want that mess to be made.
Yep.
And I'll probably get in trouble for this, but I think this latest allegation or any of the others should come forward. And I know that's a hard thing to say. And I've got a note here that sort of ties in with this from Darlene in Connecticut. My hackles are up. Men should have no say on the abortion issue. I have no disagreement. You've always said, Bob, that the simple explanation is the accurate one. Men, and we're talking predominantly white men, having a say on the decision a woman makes over her own body simply boils down to men's attempts to continue to exert control over women, no matter the color of her skin. Although we all know that racist white men would prefer that white women be pelting out the babies at higher rates than women of color. That's a whole other issue tied up in this mess. And that's why I can't stand Matt Taibbi, Darlene says. As much as he is considered such a great journalist, I remember him flippantly saying on the now-defunct Air America years ago that the abortion issue should be relegated to the states and that the federal government should stay out of it. I was appalled at the arrogant, callous bullshit coming out of his then rather young mouth, a man of a younger generation who ought to know better. It's caused me to take pause and view with skepticism any article he authors. And it's a constitutional right. You can't talk about undoing Roe versus Wade without saying, by the way, we're undoing a constitutional right. And every time some right-wing piece of shit talks about undoing Roe versus Wade, the answer should be, well, go ahead, and we'll come for the Second Amendment next. Because if you can take away one constitutional right, you can take away another one.
They all fall like dominoes.
By the way, I don't know if you saw this, Bob. Did you see about Justin Amash?
Yeah, bailing out.
Yep, he left the party.
Yeah, I'm not getting all excited about that, though, because he's as bad as any of the Republicans have been. I mean, even if he's not in the GOP anymore, he is more to the right than most Republican members of Congress.
You're right, but on this one narrow issue of impeachment, maybe, just maybe, he is the Barry Goldwater in the room.
He may be. And for that, he has some value. But I still am not inclined to trust him.
Oh, I'm with you.
Yeah, but Steve, you know, you mentioned Barry Goldwater. He was a senator.
So I know.
We need Republican senators to start stepping up, and I don't see that happening. Come on, not this past.
Well, not as long as Mitch McConnell has all the dirty pictures.
And all the Russian money,
yeah.
And all the accounts with the Russian rubles in those accounts.
By the way, note coming from Shorty in L.A. in regard to the latest allegation against Trump. Remember, she never washed the clothes that she wore for the Trump rape.
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
She's
yeah.
toying with Trump, saying I'm not charging him, but says she never washed the clothes. That's
why you're not going to see a defamation suit.
Right, and by the way, that's also why a prosecutor could go and get a search warrant to go and get those articles of clothing and have them tested.
Yep.
And then she's either telling the truth or she's not. I believe her.
Or inconclusive, right?
Well, you'd have to have some sort of... Then you'd have... If you've got that and you find the material and it's still recoverable after all these years, then you've got a right to get a search warrant and go to Donald Trump and say we need a DNA sample.
I question the quality of the DNA on the clothes.
I don't know enough about the science to know if it could be recovered, but there was no trouble with a stained blue dress. I remember 20 years.
You know, I was thinking about that, but I'm like, I don't want to be the one to go there. Oh, can I ask? Let me ask one last question. I know I didn't realize we were getting late, or it's going to be my last question. Did you see this thing? And this really pissed me off. this thing about these protesters burning the flag, and I get you know, desperate times, desperate measures, et cetera, et cetera. But I saw that and I thought, you know what? That's not going to help.
Yeah, at the risk of us sounding like concerned trolls, yeah. Because I say that because it's a matter of thinking strategically versus thinking in the moment.
And you're giving
that. I saw that story, and I thought, did anybody bother to follow that person home and watch him, you know, turn on Fox or go to Breitbart or Stormfront? Because it was so over the top a terrible idea that it smelled like
subversion,
and agent provocateur.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, but Bob, given, you know, what we've heard from broccoli and celery or granola boy or whatever, it wouldn't surprise me. Tree beard and celery.
Well, now, how much traction is this Colin Kaepernick, Nike, Betsy Ross flag? How much traction is this getting? Right wing's going ape shit over it, right?
Well, they are, but they have the usual suspects in there stoking the flames. I mean, the multimillionaire for-profit media will always stand around the periphery of one of those saying, come on, let's you and him fight. And then they'll cover the controversy. When there's no controversy.
I wish, and I've seen some people say this, I wish someone would, the easy way to quell this and say is to say, wait a second, Mr. and Mrs. Worship the flag. You're not supposed to put the flag on as clothing. What about that?
Oh, yeah. There was some maggot flying a big old flag yesterday in D.C. with Trump's mug plastered all over it.
All over the flag?
Oh, yeah. And Make America Great Again written on it at the bottom, sure.
Got to burn that one.
Bob, these are the same people who say they want to get back to the Constitution. Of course, if you ask them anything about the Constitution, they don't have the first fucking clue.
No, I always hearken back to that Onion article from years ago because it has proven to be so prophetic. Man, passionate defender of Constitution that exists only in his own mind. You know, right there in the Constitution where it talks about Jesus and John Wayne.
Jesus. You know, I just remembered a funny story. My mother has a cousin who is one of these religious crazies, and my mom would send me these, she would forward me, you know, these, you'd get these long screeds about, anyway, these forwarded mess, you know what I'm talking about,
yep.
These long, and this, I look at this one, and it was during Obama, and they were talking about where Obama said something along the lines of, you know, we're not a Christian nation, which we're not, and it actually says in there, how dare he say that, he's obviously, you know, he's obviously never read the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And I thought, yeah, and if you do, you'll find Jesus in there absolutely zero times. And you couple that with Article 11 of the Treaty of Tripoli, and it's pretty clear.
The United States is in no wise founded upon the Christian religion.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you ever seen David Barton try to weasel out of that one?
Oh, Jesus God. Yeah, he makes me want to eat dirt and run rabbits.
Oh, can I? What does that mean?
It means it makes you completely lose all control of your faculties, and I think it's a sort of hillbillyization of the story of what happened to Nebuchadnezzar, because we're all for big Bible allusions here. You know, Nebuchadnezzar God turned him wild, and he ran, and he, you know, ran with the goats and the jackasses or something for a while. But
it sounds like something a rabid dog would do. Huh?
I thought it had to do with Bugs Bunny and the hillbilly.
No. No, to eat dirt and run rabbits is to, you know, obviously, you know, you don't eat dirt. So you're pretty well around the bend. And then if you're running rabbits, you're engaged in a further futile act, and you're going to wind up in the briars, and it's going to hurt a lot. So you're completely devoid of your faculties. We have run over a little bit. I want to thank everybody. Good conversations tonight. Thank you very much, Steve, and thanks, Christopher. Thanks to everybody who popped in. Thanks to Roger early on. Thank you, Billable Rick. Good to hear from you. And Joe there in Cleveland. We'll get after it again on Monday. Thank you, Sparky, for your moderating duties both in the chat room and in the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves for the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thanks to all of you who jumped in on fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly. We finished the program down $280 going into Moran Monday. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, including Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.